Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC card with your hosts, Tyler from TB Scouting MMA and
Guru Scouting MMA, back again for UFC 265, Ciryl Gane versus Derek Lewis for the Interim Heavyweight Championship. I really can't wait to break this one down, but not only because it's a fantastic card. We have James from Lucrative MMA in the building. Thank you so much for being here.
What's up, boys? Happy to be here. This is a lot better card than last week. Did go on Lock of the Night's podcast last week and was able to make it somewhat fun. So now we have a very good card. So hopefully it'll be, you know, hopefully it'll be a banger and hopefully we'll make some money. And that's what we're aiming to do here. So yeah, man, happy to be on. Thanks for having me and let's get it.
Definitely. Why waste any time? We're here to make some money and we got one of the best at it. So we kicked the fight card off. We got Johnny Munoz versus Jamie Simmons. And this is definitely one of the lower level fights, at least on one side of the equation. They brought Simmons in late notice to fight Jigu Chikadze after one of his fights fell through. And Chikadze followed up with a round one knockout. And, you know, Munoz in his debut lost a pretty tough decision to Nate Maness. So, you know, we see each guy come in losing their debut. And yeah, definitely an interesting fight. You see Munoz land right now at, on DraftKings at minus 265. Simmons at plus 215. I definitely think that Munoz should comfortably find a victory. He seems to have comfortable striking, kicks to the body. And yeah, that jiu-jitsu is obviously high level. But Simmons, you know, plus 215, you know, minus 265. It seems a little bit wide for like a lower level fight like that. I'm curious, what are your guys' thoughts?
So what I saw from this was that Munoz obviously relies on his jiu-jitsu. He's won 6 of his 10 fights by submission. He does, unfortunately, drop his hands a lot when he throws his kicks, which you do sometimes see a lot with the jiu-jitsu guys. He pulled out of their last matchup in April due to a rib injury, so I do kind of find that a little interesting. So he was spamming takedowns versus Nate Maness, but I think he only got one. It was really an impressive performance from Nate Maness in that respect. But when it came down to that third round where he, Munoz got a point deduction, there's no way to call it a robbery. Obviously, it was a damn close fight. But I don't know. I kind of saw that third round from Munoz. So the MMA journalist kind of saw that fight from Munoz as well. I was wondering what you guys saw in that Munoz-Maness fight. But I didn't hate it. Munoz definitely could have done more. But I think against Jamie Simmons here, who's so much smaller, he's not going to be able to keep Munoz away from him for forever. He's not going to be able to use range. I don't think he has incredible power or elite striking to keep him away. So I think that Munoz eventually gets close and puts him down. And I don't love the line. I think the line is a little wide. At least if anything, it's just pricey on guys that you can't really trust. So I don't know. Munoz for sub double chance was minus 200. It cuts it a little bit. I don't know. I kind of think the fight might go the distance. What do you think, Lucrative?
Yeah, man. So I agree with a lot of what you're saying here. Johnny Munoz Jr., obviously a wrestler and a jiu-jitsu fighter at heart. Same thing with Jamie Simmons, to be honest. You know, he's got a couple of knockouts on his record. I remember him seeing him knock out one guy on the regional scene. But he is a wrestler as well, right? So one of the things I was looking for in tape when I was watching Jamie Simmons was if he defends takedowns well. And I watched about 7 or 8 fights, all the fights I could get my hands on. And I couldn't really find basically any tape on Jamie Simmons defending takedowns, right? There was a couple of times where he did get taken down, but it wasn't like a defending against a fighter who was proactively trying to take him down. It was more of they was in a little scramble. The fighter just jumped on his hips and took him down. So that's what Moon is going to do, right? He's going to try and take Jamie Simmons down. Now, can Jamie Simmons stop them takedowns? I'm going to say probably not, But again, it is kind of hard to definitively say that because I haven't really seen his takedown defense tested. Now, let's just say that he does have great takedown defense. He is able to stop Johnny Munoz from taking him down. Then it's going to be a striking fight, right? Who's the better striker? I don't really know, man. I believe Johnny Munoz Jr. is probably going to be able to win on the feet because the threat of the takedowns may open up to strike him a little bit more. But if it was a plain kickboxing match, it'd be very hard for me to say who's going to win that fight. So, look, I think Johnny Munoz is going to be able to get the takedowns. I am predicting that to happen, but I can't be super definitive, right? And especially when he's like minus 250, if you don't know that's definitely going to happen, then it is kind of, it's a bit risky to make that bet, right? But I do think Munoz kind of has him covered in most aspects. He's definitely the better jiu-jitsu fighter. He is the better wrestler. And then I do think he's probably going to be able to outstrike him potentially, but that one is a little bit more of a guess. So yeah, man, I'm going to take Johnny Munoz Jr. for the win, but it's not a hugely confident pick, but you know, I would price him probably around the minus 200 or so range.
That everything you said makes sense. You can't feel too confident in this. If you feel too confident in this, you must have some inside information or something, because you know, like you said, yeah, there's too many X factors.
There really isn't anyone combing through the tape like that. And yeah, honestly, that's what it is. If you can't find a definitive answer, there's no need to make a definitive play. And while our prediction remains that Munoz should find the victory, and you know, submission plus 165, that's really not the best value when this thing could just go the distance. And I mean, realistically, it just feels like you should keep him out of your parlays, keep everything out. But if someone asks you who you're taking for that fight, I think it sounds like we're all taking Munoz.
It's a good pregame fight, you know, get your buzz going.
It should be exciting. There should be some scrambles, some fun striking, but realistically, not one that I'm looking to spend a lot of money on. And here we are on to our next fight, and that might stay the theme on this one too. We got Victoria Leonardo coming in versus Melissa Gatto. So we only have one UFC fight between the two. And Gatto's been out for a pretty long time at this point and hasn't even made her debut yet before she got popped by USADA. So, the thing that I see is that Gatto, you know, on the regional scene, she has a couple draws, but you could definitely argue that maybe they could have been losses on her record. You know, it's a little sketchy when you look further into it. And I don't trust, we don't really have definitive measurables for this fight, so I do want to see them face off. And Leonardo, she has been knocked out a couple times with some head kicks by Blanchfield and Fioro so far in her career. So, you know, while I would like to take the fighter that did at least get one UFC win under their belt, getting into the second round with the beast herself, Manon Fioro, Victoria Leonardo seems like the attractive play. The line right now, minus 110. So we got to pick them here. And, you know, I'm not so sure that I'm willing to place a huge bet on either side, just given the lack of information for me.
Yeah, I think whatever side you end up on, I'm not sure that you could end up having a major play. But from what I saw from Leonardo, she does have a wide stance. So that does kind of open her up to whether it's leg kicks or being taken down. She took huge shots versus Fioro, so I give her chin a lot of credit in that respect, because it did hold up for a decent amount of time. What else? You said Gatto hasn't fought in a while. Her round one submission versus Carol Rosa in 2018 was kind of weird. She'd gotten taken down and was kind of getting beat up for most of that fight, and was able to just kind of grab the arm and lock in that Kimura. It was impressive the way that she was able to do it, but you have to wonder how experienced Carol Rosa was at that time and how much credit you can really put into that win. We've seen a lot of fighters coming off of multi-year layoffs taking wins, so that's kind of why I wanted to lean Gatto at first. But from the tape, I do like Leonardo's toughness. And I was really one thing that was really weird for the Fiora fight, I'm not sure if anybody saw this, but whoever tied Leonardo's hair for that fight should be fired. It was pathetic. The braids came out within 2 seconds, and she was the whole fight, when this Wonder Boy-esque fighter is throwing head kicks and all these strikes to the body, and you don't even know where they're coming from. She's busy brushing her hair out of her face. I felt horrible for this poor chick, who probably shouldn't have even been in there with that chick to begin with. So I thought Leonardo had a good test of herself. I think she'll be mad on like some sort of personal level and want to get the win here. Obviously Styles makes fights. I'm not really sure. From what I saw from Gatto, she doesn't really strike very well at all. She just kind of looks to rush into clinch. So I don't know how well that will work against Leonardo, likes to wrestle, a decent wrestler in herself. I'd really like to hear what Lucrative has to say about this one.
Yeah, this is such a hard fight to call, right? Because on one hand, we've got loads of tape on the Leonardo side, and it kind of looks like she's not a very good fighter. And then on the other hand, we've got virtually no tape on the Gatto fight. And to be honest, it looks like she's not a very good fighter. But what it does look like is that Gatto seems to be, from what I can see, pretty good jiu-jitsu fighter. Now, I know if you go back and watch that Sidi Rocha draw, which I know you touched on it, Guru, Tyler, that was not a draw. I mean, that it's crazy. It should have been at least 29-28. I'm guessing they gave the draw because in the third round, Gatto has her in this, I can't remember, it was some weird submission where she's got her legs over her head. It was kind of like a triangle. And then, you know, she gets out of it and ends the round on top. And then somehow they give that a 10-8. And then it was obviously a draw, but she should have lost that fight. Whatever, they gave it a draw. But it does look like she has got good jiu-jitsu. I know she was controlled a lot of that fight on the floor, but she was still throwing up submissions from the bottom. There was a few reversals in that fight. And then obviously in the Carol Rosa fight, Carol Rosa is a decent UFC fighter, as we know. When she was taken down by Carol Rosa, and she can be taken down, she hasn't got very good takedown defense. I mean, she wants to be on the ground, right? I'm talking about Melissa Gatto here. So I guess 100%. She kind of just half gives up them takedowns because she wants to be on the floor anyway, right? She's a jiu-jitsu fighter, so she isn't too worried about being taken down. In that Carol Rosa fight, she was taken down and she put Carol Rosa in a triangle, I believe. Carol Rosa was able to get out of that. And Carol Rosa was like, okay, I don't want to be on the ground with this girl. They ended up going on the ground again not too long later. And then she was submitted with a Kimura, right? So yeah. I do think she's pretty dangerous on the ground. And I do think that Victoria Leonardo, she does like to lean on that wrestling, right? She's a fairly decent striker, meat and potatoes, nothing special, but she will mix in the takedowns. Like most of her wins, you will see, she mixes in the takedowns, right? We saw it in a contender series. We saw it against Liz Tracy. We've seen it in most of her fights. That's what she is. She's kind of she's an MMA fighter, right? She's not the best at anything, but she's decent at everything, right? So I believe that in this fight, she probably will go to the takedowns a couple of times. If I was her coach, I'd tell her just to stay away from the jiu-jitsu realm altogether. You know, she has been submitted before. She was submitted in about 2 minutes by Miranda Maverick back in the day. But she did seem to show some improved takedown, not defense, but jiu-jitsu defense, because I have seen her since that fight defend some submissions. But at the end of the day, Melissa Gatto, from what we can see, potentially is fairly high level on the ground. And, you know, I'm saying potentially because we just don't have a lot of tape, as I've said. So for me, it's a complete pass of a fight, right? As I said, I think Victoria Leonardo needs to keep it on the feet, and she probably wins on the feet. But even then, this chick, Gatto, has been out for 3 years. She's 22 years old in her last fight. Now she's 25 years old. There could be loads of improvements. We expect to see improvements from any fighter that age. But especially with a fighter who hasn't been in the octagon, they've obviously had a lot more time to train, you know, to perfect their skills as opposed to perfect game plans for a specific fighter. So breaking it all down, I'm going to have to go with Victoria Leonardo just because we've seen, you know, more from her. But I would not be surprised if Gatto comes out here and gets the submission after Victoria takes her down. And then even on the feet, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a fairly close fight, because we just haven't seen much from Gatto, and, you know, there could be hell of improvements. And the stuff I have seen doesn't look good on the feet, but she was tagging Carol Rosa a little bit with the boxing. So, look, man, I don't know how I've spent the last 7 minutes talking about this fight, because this fight is not one you you speak about for 7 minutes, but I've managed to do it. I'm going to go with Victoria Leonardo to get the win, but yeah, super not confident. I'd stay away if I was you.
I totally 100%. Agree. And I have confirmed it was a 1-year suspension for a diuretic. Ooh. So it also makes you wonder, is Gato going to have a little bit of trouble getting down to make weight? So I'd love to see how they measure up at the face-offs before, you know, making any confident play. But like we were talking about, I really don't think there is a confident play here. Seems like we have a consensus on Leonardo, though. So let's move right along.
Also, one thing about that fight. Sure. Gato is moving down in weight. You know, you mentioned if she was going to be able to make weight. She's usually a bantamweight, and now she's moving down to flyweight. So that's going to be interesting because... Yeah, I mean, 3 years away now, she's moving down in weight. So there's just another added layer of the question marks on this fight. So I guess that's why we're all staying away.
That's it. Good call. And definitely. So I feel like, we did just break down this fight a few weeks ago. We got Miles Johns versus Anderson Dos Santos. We had a COVID rebooking,
on the Dos Santos side.
Yes. So here we come a few weeks later, and it's a very similar line to what we had before. And Miles Johns seems to continue to be the people's favorite here. We're at -220, Anderson Dos Santos at +180. I think it really comes down to Dos Santos being the more explosive, a little bit more dangerous fighter offensively, but having tons of defensive holes that can be exploited if you're disciplined and can take advantage of it. Because while he is good at jiu-jitsu, he's not beyond being taken down and controlled from the top. But yeah, I think we've seen a lot on tape of Miles Johns just not being consistently put together as far as his like game plan goes. He gets knocked out by Mario Bautista. You know, that obviously came as a bit of a surprise. But and for his only career loss, it's just in his wins. He also has, you know, a few split decisions, you know, one against Cole Smith where, yeah, you'd really like to see a more definitive win there. And also he has one against Adrian Yanez, which that looks to be a great win on his record now, but still remains a split decision. So it's not like Johns hasn't had close fights before. And, you know, it's sitting at -220. It just makes me really nervous here with the guy in Dos Santos who finally picked up his first victory against Martin Day and showed that he can get a finish in the UFC, albeit against, you know, a lower level opponent, obviously. But maybe he has a little momentum, and Johns just at this price, I can't trust him. So once again, I mean, maybe it's a very small sprinkle on the underdog for me here, but this isn't something that I'm looking to parlay or make one of my bigger plays of the day.
So I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm just on the other side. I do think that it's overpriced. I think you're getting paying a little bit of too much of a premium on Johns at -225 here. He hasn't really done as much to really deserve that. Yeah, his stats are a little high, a little impressive. But when you start to really break down those stats, you kind of start to see that there are holes that can be exploited. The problem is I'm not sure that Anderson Dos Santos is the guy to exploit them. Like we've talked about, his only UFC win is against Martin Day, who is objectively not UFC material. So I guess I like Johns by decision +120. Kind of takes a minus, you know, a high value person, and you start to cut some of that line value and make it a plus money play. So I do see it going the distance. I don't think that he'll get the finish, but as I say that, you wonder, Dos Santos having to cut weight or prepare to cut weight twice in 3 weeks, just had COVID. I wonder how he's going to handle this or how he'll come in looking. So I certainly want to see the weigh-ins. Lucrative, hand it off to you, buddy.
Yeah, so I don't have like a huge take on this one. Obviously, I taped it a couple of weeks ago when they was scheduled to fight. I did kind of think that it could be like a low-key banger and we might get some finishing potential in that fight. I say that because I saw the line was like +160. The fight doesn't go to decision or under 2.5. And I was looking at that. I thought, you know, it might be a sneaky good play. But at the end of the day, Miles Johns, he's, you know, favored to win, like you said. And if he does win, it is probably going to be a decision. You know, I just think this is a fight where, you know, they're probably going to meet in the middle at times. Johns has pretty decent boxing, but Anderson Dos Santos, you know, he basically forces fights to be. He doesn't force finish. I mean, you could say he forces finishes, but he forces fights to be very, you know, nitty gritty, competitive. There's a lot going on in Anderson Dos Santos fights, right? He's hunting submissions from weird positions. Like anytime he's fighting, it's gonna be a fairly exciting fight. Can Jones take him down and just grind him out for three rounds? Yes. Is that the most likely thing to happen? Yes, but you know, when we're betting, we're not looking at the most likely thing to happen. I mean, in some sense we are, but we're looking at the inaccuracies in the market, right? So you look at the numbers, you look at the betting odds, and you look at if there's any value on any lines, right? Even if you think that it's not necessarily going to happen or most likely thing's going to happen, you still may bet it, right? And that's what we're doing. This is a betting podcast as well. So in terms of the bet, look, I did look at the under. I'm not going to play it though. Anderson Dos Santos, most of his finishes come by submission. And I think his submission's line like plus 800 now. So to be honest, I don't mind a stab on that. If you did want to bet Anderson Dos Santos, I could see like a club and sub happening. I could see a guillotine happening. You expect Miles Johns to go in for the takedowns consistently. That's what he's known to do. If he does do that, Anderson Dos Santos' favorite move is the guillotine. He did get it in his last fight against Martin Day. He has got it 4 or 5 times in his career, if you go back and check his regional scene record. So, you know, that is probably live as well. I don't hate the stab at that. I guess I'm going to come out and say Anderson Dos Santos shocks us, gets a submission win in the second round. That is going to be my final prediction. But yeah, as I said when I first started the breakdown, I haven't got a huge lean either side. So then you move on to the betting odds, and then the betting odds basically make me lean on the Santos side because of the line and because of the submission prop as well. So that's my final prediction. But again, not too convicted on this fight.
You know, I love me a greasy submission prop. I mean, plus 800. And like you said, I mean, 12 career submissions for Dos Santos. And the thing I noticed in John's fight, the split decision against Cole Smith, he gives up his back so easily and gets backpacked for essentially the entire first round. And then, you know, he doesn't really advance position well on Smith, and he gives up the back after getting swept in reverse. So it's not beyond, you know, question that he's going to get in the position for a rear naked choke. But yeah, that guillotine is also going to be there as he shoots inconsistently. So, wow, I didn't really consider, you know, the prop so much as the money line. But at plus 800, I mean, I think you really touched on something interesting there.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing you touched on, honestly, is the linear thought, is the way to apply that to betting, that yes. we're not just betting what we think is the most likely thing to happen. The Vegas gives us the game. You know, we have to play with the cards that they deal us. You know, so yeah. Is the most likely thing, quote unquote, to happen, John's to win, John's by decision? Sure, why not? But there's no value in it. We've scoured the lines. We've done our tape. There's no value in it. There's no reason. Even if you win, great. You didn't make a good bet, even if you won, because there's no value. So it's a tough side to be on. So I'll probably stay away from me. Probably end up circling John's. But I might take a little greasy flyer with you guys, because I get FOMO really bad. So I might be cheering for that.
Yeah, so I guess that was definitely a fun one, and now we move right along to our next fight, which honestly has some potential to be a real banger in its own right. We got Manel Kopp looking for his first UFC win, coming over from Ryzen, and you got Ode Osborne making his flyweight debut in the UFC. Super interesting fight. We saw him fight Kelleher in his debut and get submitted with a guillotine. We see him then fight Jerome Glasschin Rivera, get a first round knockout up at 145, and now dropping down to 125. Ode Osborne, I definitely need to see him on the scale and see how it's going to go. But he comes in with a 2-inch height, 5-inch reach advantage. That's super significant for a guy that has the type of power and finishing potential that we know Osborne does. Also, he has immense grappling abilities, and having a reach advantage like that is definitely a big advantage. However, Kopp is a very solid wrestler in his own right. He's shown, obviously, the ability to go toe-to-toe and strike with high-level UFC talent. I mean, Nicolau and Pantoja are as high-level as it gets in the flyweight division outside of the top five there. So, you know, you can't fault them too much for how those losses came. And you could make the argument maybe Kopp should have gotten the victory against Nicolau.
That would be the argument that I want to make, honestly.
All right. Well, I'll beat Nicolau. I will let you get to that because we see the line here. And it's Menil Kopp -210 and Ode Osborne +175. I'm getting like the little itch to once again take a look at the underdog here. But man, that's contingent on like a great weigh-in. And really just you would have to think that Kopp is not like a high-level UFC talent at that point. I'm not so ready to say that. What are your thoughts?
So I first off, I think he beat Matthias Nicolau in his last fight. That was 1-1 going into the third, and I think he did enough to win that third round. Simply put, the MMA on MMADecisions.com, the journalists, all thought Kopp won. Kopp was absolutely astonished, totally meme-worthy, his face after. I really don't blame him, honestly. I was stunned as well. The weight cut for Ode Osborne is extremely concerning in my mind, dropping down two weight classes. Because he doesn't necessarily have the worst frame for 145. So for him to come to 125 is just, as a premier athlete, and I do think that all the people in the UFC are premier athletes, like you're depleting your body so much, muscle, nutrients. It's just, he must really think that he can get those weights off, because 20 pounds is a lot of fucking weight.
Well, the 145 was just a short notice catch weight, but he is a 135er.
That makes sense. All right, so yeah. That makes a little bit more sense. So coming down only really 10 pounds, yeah. Or he had a couple, yeah, it's really mostly bantamweight fights. So you're right, only 10 pounds, but all right, that's even a little bit more. Osborne was a Dana White Contender Series winner. I know you like to fade them. He lost his UFC debut to a guillotine from Brian Kelleher. That was what we call the Boom Boom Special. And then he KO'd Jerome Rivera in 26 seconds. We gain absolutely nothing from that. So what I see a guy in Ode Osborne who hasn't gone past the first round since September of 2016. That's what I see in Ode Osborne. So it's been 5 years since he's gone more than 5 minutes.
I don't
see him finishing Kopp in the first round. So I think this fight is going to extend. And as it extends, I think Kopp, you know, uses his mobility and his striking ability to start to pull away. I do expect Kopp on some level to still be hesitant in the first round, because that's just kind of seems to be his way. I don't expect that to change. What you do mention about the intangibles of the height and reach, I look back to when he fought Kai Asakura, and he had the split decision loss to Kai in the first fight, but came back and had no problem with that in the second fight. And Kai is also somebody with a taller and reach advantage. So to me, Menil Kopp is somebody that's fought at an extremely high level, should have won his last fight, needs a win, deserves a win, should come out here and get a win against a guy that, in Ode Osborne, that sure maybe has some intangibles that we know we may like him for the division or like him to as a prospect, but he really should be nowhere on the level of Menil Kopp. It's to the point that I almost think -200 could be, like, there could still be some value left in that. But the play I like the most is Kopp and over 1.5 +100 on DraftKings.
All right. And what about you, Luca? What are you saying?
Yeah. Yeah, so, look, I've got to agree with a lot of what you guys said. To be honest, like, most of the things I was going to say, you both touched on them. Yeah, it was a great breakdown, to be honest. It might turn out to be a shit breakdown, which means just we're all wrong. But I was going to say basically the same things as what most of you guys said, right? So, look, I think it's just Cape's fight to win, right? Cape. In his last fight, fought Nicolau. Nicolau's a good fighter. Nicolau, you know, won the first round easily with wrestling, really. Was able to take him down, stay on top. Second round, Cape comeback, almost finished Nicolau. When I say almost finished, it's a little bit, you know, tongue-in-cheek. Cape hurt him a couple of times, dropped him once, but it was more of a flash knockdown with like a step in jab. But he did have him on skates literally for 5 minutes of that round. I was actually holding a Cape in round two ticket at like +800, which was very specific. I don't usually bet round twos. It's usually round one or round three because, you know, the fighter either gets a quick finish or wears him down. But I've noticed Cape tends to start, you know, takes a while to start. But when he does get going, he hits very hard. And, you know, basically the breakdown was kind of strong. He just didn't get in the finish. And obviously Nicolau comes back in the third round. And it's very close for like the first half of that third round. Then the second half, Cape kind of starts to pull away. But Nicolau's landing more volume, but Cape's hitting him harder. Very hard fight to judge, in my opinion. At the time, I thought Cape won. Then when I rewatched it for tape, I was kind of split. I didn't really know who won. But like Nicolau is a tough fighter, a very good fighter. You know, I don't know why he was released. I believe he was released from the UFC initially. Mm-hmm. I guess it was because there was kind of flyweight division, or that might have been before. I don't really know. But he should have been in the UFC the whole time. He's definitely a UFC level fighter. Very good one, in my opinion. And then Pantoja, Cape's debut, that's another very, very high level UFC fighter, man. You know, so this is a big step down for him. But I will say that Ode Osborne, like you guys said, can be a very good player in this division if he makes weight okay, which I suspect he should be able to. Obviously, that's yet to be said. When he fought at that featherweight limit against Jerome Rivera, he actually weighed in at 143 pounds, so he didn't even tip the scales there. So he's obviously got a light frame, but he is a big dude, right? Especially for, he's a big dude for bantamweight, so he's definitely a big dude for flyweight. He's going to have about 6 inches of reach or something about around there. Mm-hmm. 73-inch reach of Ode Osborne to the 68th of Manuel Cape. So that's 5-inch reach advantage. He's going to have a 2-inch height advantage. So, and I think he's potentially going to have the power advantage. You know, he's obviously power translates up the weight class, up two weight classes, because he knocked out Jerome Rivera. Now, say what you want about Jerome Rivera, he's still a full-blown featherweight, you know, so it was good to see potential flyweight Ode Osborne carry his power out that weight class. But Cape has a lot of power as well, you know. So, look, I think Cape's mixed it at a higher level. Cape's way more proven. As Guru said, Cape's been into round three in his last two fights, whereas Ode Osborne hasn't been in round three for multiple years. Ode Osborne is there to be hit, and fighting Cape is not a good fighter to be there to be hit against, right? But I will say that Cape is always also there to be hit. Cape's been not rocked, but he got hit very hard by Nicolau, seemed to, like, stun him just for a second, but Cape's got a very good chin. We're basically saying that Ode Osborne's there to be hit. He potentially might gas, and Cape hits very hard. And then we're also saying that Cape, or I'm saying that Cape is there to be hit, and Ode Osborne definitely hits very hard. So I think someone's going to get hurt in this fight right now. I'm not going to opt for the under, or I might do, but I haven't opted for the under yet. I don't know what the price is currently sitting at. I can bring it up here if you guys don't have it in front of you. But under 2.5 rounds, still plus money. So +105, +105, +110, +122 if you got five dimes. So look, plus number for a fight that I think is going to be, you know, it's going to be a very exciting fight, right? Both guys are strikers by nature. So you're not going to have to worry about Nicolau taking, you know, Ode Osborne doing a Nicolau and taking him down and laying praying on him. That is his weakness. Manuel Cape's weakness is, you know, the takedowns, although he has shown great takedown defense in the UFC thus far. So look, in terms of a bet, yeah, I'm not really rushing to the window to bet any money line price, although I do probably price Cape at about a 70%, which would mean there is marginal value, like you said, Guru, on his -200 line. You know, if I'm lining him 70%, it means I think he should be around -233. So yeah, maybe some value on there. Not enough value for me to pull the trigger on the money line personally. But yeah, man, I'm going to go with Manuel Cape for the win. And I'm gonna say he gets a knockout. I'm going to say he gets a knockout on Ode Osborne here in the second round.
I like that. And you know what? This is why I like the conversation, because I think that itch is gone. I'm really not looking to play that underdog at all anymore. You know, and that's what it was. Is like, you know, you look at some of the physical attributes and stuff like that, but it doesn't really matter much for skill, you know? And I think that's what we're looking at, is a much more skilled fighter on the side of Manuel Cape.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that Cape is there to be hit, right? And Ode Osborne definitely hits hard. You know, Ode Osborne's got quite a few first-round finishes. So, look, he could come out there and blow Manuel away. Manuel's a slow starter, and then Ode Osborne is a fast starter, you know? And Ode Osborne's got height, he's got reach. And he's dropping down weight. He might be the much larger guy. He's probably hits harder than most of the fighters Manel's ever fought. So, man, I'm not going to hate on anyone taking a shot on Ode, but it's kind of more like if you are taking a shot on Ode, potentially just take the inside the distance. I know Cape has only been finished once against Horiguchi in late in the third round, but it's hard for me to see, you know, Ode winning minutes. But yeah, I don't hate anyone taking an underdog shot. I just wanted to put that out there. But at the same time, I'm saying it's probably marginal value on Cape. I mean, we'll see, though. We'll see.
Is there any chance you give Cape another chance to redeem himself for with a round two finish prop for you?
I don't know, man. It's funny. Like, I've done this tape. I haven't got any bets on this fight. And but, you know, when I come on and I speak on people's podcasts or I do my own podcast, I sometimes talk myself into bets, right? Because I'm talking out loud. My thoughts are coming out. And it's one thing having all the thoughts in your head, but actually verbalizing it, it kind of sways you in a direction, you know? So sometimes they work, you know, I've given out certain bets when I'm speaking out loud, but sometimes they don't work. So I don't know. I might, you know, speaking about it now, I potentially might go back and try and see Ode Osborne's cardio, see if he does slow down. But I do know he's got a decision win on his, I think he's got a decision win on his record.
Decision win and one decision loss.
Okay, yeah. And that was a split decision, but I couldn't get, that was it. I couldn't get tape on that decision loss, right? And it was a split decision. So, you know, potentially, maybe he should have lost that. One judge said he lost that fight. So maybe he does slow down in that fight. But I guess one thing I will say as well, just quickly before I finish, is that there's not a lot of tape on Ode Osborne. We don't really know who he is as a fighter, right? We haven't seen him at that high level of the UFC. We haven't really seen him in extended fights at all. So it's very hard for you to make a definitive breakdown. You know, it's kind of like speaking about Melissa Gatto again. We do know a bit more about Ode Osborne, but for me, we still don't know enough for me to bet him at the current price, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of question marks on his side. Round two, Manel Cape. It's possible. I'll see the odds and then I'll make a decision.
Yeah, just a little small one, maybe.
I'll be surfing your Twitter to make sure. I'll be like, did he place it? Did he announce it? Did it come out? I'll be looking.
So yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums up that one. So let's get into a really interesting fight, talking about some people that have had some long layoffs recently. Karolina Kowalkiewicz versus Jessica Penne. And Penne just made her return recently versus the short notice Lupi Godinez. So, and that was a real sketchy split decision victory. I mean, listen, when you're talking damage, you're talking about, you know, striking and stuff like that, it's great. But I will say Godinez did let herself get backpacked a little too much. And yeah, that it ends up being a real sketchy decision. So Penne, successful return. She comes off a long layoff out of Alliance MMA. Kowalkiewicz gets her face absolutely busted up, broken orbital, all types of fractures. Yan Xiaonan absolutely took care of business in that fight. But you know what? Something you can say about Kowalkiewicz is that she's got some toughness. And outside of, you know, Jessica Andrade with a round one knockout and Claudia Gagelia with a round one submission, you know, she goes the distance with Jędrzejczyk, with Watterson, with Grasso, with Jan. So it's not that Kowalkiewicz can't handle the pressure. She's been in there with some of the biggest names. She has a victory over Rose Namajunas given, you know, about 5 years ago at this point. So that's a completely different Rose. But yeah, I think you look at the line here and Kowalkiewicz has slowly started opening up to a minus 125, Penne at a plus 105. And I tend to lean to the Kowalkiewicz side just because I don't think she allows Penne to close the distance that she was able to do on Godinez. Even though Penne will have a 3-inch reach advantage, she's just such a hard striker and relies so much on getting inside into the clinch and getting into takedown opportunities that I do think Kowalkiewicz, while some of her statistics aren't great, I think it was against much higher level of competition. And Penne's 38 years old. Kowalkiewicz not so young at 35. But I trust Kowalkiewicz coming off a nice layoff to really repair after a lot of beatings that she took recently. So, yeah, I find myself leaning towards the favorite at minus 125.
To me, this is – I hate to sound like a broken record. This is just kind of one of those fights that's like – so many question marks, really tough, kind of look to stay away. But as you start to really boil it down, like you said, you have Karolina Kowalkiewicz coming off the extended layoff, took an absolute beating versus Yao Xiaonan. To me, that could be a fight changing, a life changing beating, a fight mentality changing beating. I have no idea how she mentally responds after taking that kind of beating. And not for nothing, I kind of saw that as a little bit of a mark against Yao Xiaonan, because she had the opportunities to finish Carolina Kowalkiewicz, but just didn't maybe realize how hurt she was. I wasn't really sure what it was, but she tended to keep taking her foot off the gas pedal there. I'm actually very surprised to see Carolina Kowalkiewicz make a return. I believe that she had almost had permanent eye damage from that fight with her vision. I guess it's gotten fixed. I don't know how much she's been training. I know from her past experience that she's more of a striker to begin with. So Jessica Penne has shown that she will look to strike and will strike, but is possibly like Hall of Fame terrible striking in the UFC. One of the worst striking defense, you know, I mean, literally tries to block every punch with her face. It's really poor. She does prefer to go to the clinch. She prefers to take it to the ground. One thing I will say about Jessica Penne is that, you know, that we know that she's in somewhat fight ready shape because she just fought. So she's obviously been training, has stayed active on some level. I don't know how much quote unquote wrestling Carolina Kowalkiewicz can do. I don't know how much she's been in the gym. I don't know how she really, I mean, we could do some Instagram capping, but I don't really know how well she looks in the gym. So I would really love like a little bit more of a scoop. I would love like a Alex Bohunin type plug about kind of like what the inner workings are on going on behind the scenes. I would love something like that. Maybe give me something to know a little bit more about. But I mean, straight up skill wise, the fighter that Carolina Kowalkiewicz was, she should be able to win. So what do you think, Lucrative?
Yeah, I agree again. But it is a weird fight because Carolina's been off for so long, so we have some question marks on the Carolina side. On a Jessica Penne, you know, her question marks were kind of answered in our last fight, because I think she took a break before our last fight as well against Lupita Godinez. She was off for 4 years. She was off for 4 years before her last fight. And then she ends up coming back and winning that fight, right? So, you know, it's hard to judge these time, you know, when the fighters have time off, because sometimes they come back, they look great. Sometimes they come back, they look terrible, man. So you basically just have to call it a question mark and don't try and read too much into it. Is she going to look bad? Is she going to look good? No one knows. Half of the time they look good, half of the time they look bad. Just basically act like it doesn't exist and go on the tape. Look, if you want to completely avoid it because of that, then fair enough. But if you are going to bet, you just have to bet on what you see on the tape, right? Whether it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago, you just have to bet what you see on the tape. And I don't, you know, Carolina Kowalkiewicz, she might come back looking bad, but Jessica Penne, it's not like she's a young gun, you know, coming up the ranks here. Look, she did take I'm talking about Carolina. She did take a life-changing beating off Yan Xianan. You know, she couldn't really get going in that fight. She caught that, I think it was an uppercut or a hook that basically broke her eye socket, broke her orbital in literally like the first minute. And I was actually live there for that fight. That was in Auckland, New Zealand, where I live. Oh, and wow. I watched that live. And I had a bet on Yan Xianan. She was massive favorite, but I parlayed her, I believe, with someone else in the card. And you know, as you can tell, I wasn't worried at all, but I was just screaming at Yan Xianan. Not really, but in my head, I was like, finish this girl. Like, she obviously doesn't want to fight, you know? I mean, you could tell Carolina was just, she didn't want to be in there, but she still lasted 15 minutes, you know, which was definitely commendable because, as I said, that break happened in 30 seconds and then she ended up going 15 minutes after that. She went back to her corner after the first round and said, I can't see that. I cannot see anything. The doctor came in, almost stopped the fight, and I thought she was done at that point. She ended up going another 10 minutes. So that's definitely commendable. We know Carolina, how tough she is. You know, we saw it in a Young Jacek fight as well. And now, ironically, she's actually training with Young Jacek. So that could be a, you know, good sign. But as Guru said, we can't Instagram cap it. You know, it's obviously a positive. She's training with Young Jacek. She got a couple posts with her. But at the end of the day, we don't know if that's going to affect it too much. So when it comes down to stylistically, like breaking it down, one more thing I will say about the mindset is that even if Carolina is kind of like gun shy because of that Yan Xiaonan fight, because of that orbital break, Jessica Penne is not really the one to bring that shyness out of her, right? It's not like she's going to be walking forward, pressuring her, hurting her, and then like she starts to second guess herself, Carolina. I believe that Jessica Penne is going to throw a couple of jabs, couple right hands, maybe a couple of kicks. She's going to want to get the grappling going. I don't think it's a very scary fight to come back to. So, you know, that is kind of, I guess that's a little bit of a good sign if you are on the Carolina side. But yeah, stylistically, I think Carolina's the better striker here. I think she should be able to box Jessica up at range. I think she'll probably throw the more volume. It really comes down to whether she can backpack Carolina like she backpacked Lupita Godinez, you know? And a lot of people argue that Godinez should have won that fight. I do think it was a very close fight. I'd have to go back and watch it to give an actual decision on who I think won. But look, man, it's a big step down for both of them. It's a big step down for Carolina because she's been fighting the killers, the murderers row in her weight division. She fought Jessica Andrade, then she fought Michelle Waterson, Alexa Grasso, and then Yan Xiaonan, you know, which are very, very more high level. I know it doesn't make sense. More high level, very more high level than Jessica Penne. So, you know, this is a massive step down in competition for her. So, I kind of think Carolina's going to be able to I think she's going to be able to win a decision victory here. Is Jessica Penne going to get the takedowns or is she going to be able to get grappling cage control time? That's really what it comes down to. And Carolina has decent takedown defense, nothing special. If you go on UFC stats, you will see she has a 75% takedown defense, but that's overblown because her first two fights, she stuffed like over 20 takedowns from Randa Marcos and some other chicks she fought. So she actually doesn't have that good takedown defense. It's fairly average. I do think it's going to be enough to probably keep her on the feet and enable her to win a striking battle at range. So yeah, I'm going to go with Carolina here. I think she's going to bounce back. I think she's the higher level fighter overall. She is the younger fighter. And yeah, I think she's going to get a decision victory in this one.
All right. Sounds like we have another pretty good consensus pick here.
We need to
not one that exactly. But we need to pull out the torches and pitchforks. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of, especially on the earlier side of the card here, a lot of fights that really should play out a certain way. So you don't want to get too cute about it.
The props, at least I saw that I liked quickly, was the Carolina in the over 2.5 at plus 100 or the Carolina decision at plus 120. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. And yeah, I'm hoping we do get a little bit of some discord eventually, but you know, great minds think alike. So I'll be honest, when I hear that lucrative is on my side, I tend to feel a lot better. We went head to head last week with the Benoit Adeshev, so that means I got one and lucrative's got 1,000 over me. So I was feeling pretty good about that one.
Great, that was a great pick, man. Yeah, Adeshev just beat that boy up, man. I mean, just disabled the calf early, and then Benoit couldn't get going. And that's actually, when we speak about the co-main event, that could be in play. So excited to speak about that one as well. The calf kick.
Well, I'm very excited. Ooh, wow, that's a good little foreshadowing over there. So yeah, let's get working. Let's get closer to that top, that main card type of deal. Because now we have another fight here where honestly, I just feel like there must be something I'm missing because it just feels way too straightforward for me. I'll be quick. Alonzo Menafield minus 240, Ed Herman plus 195. Ed Herman should have lost his last fight by knockout to the body. It didn't happen. He showed resilience in faking a nut shot and coming back and finding a submission late. Good on him. I just think as far as placing a bet on this fight, it's pretty simple for me. You should probably just be looking like Alonzo Menafield by round one knockout because that's really just the highest probability thing for me. And that's really it. That's really as far as I go, because, you know, I can't see another way it plays out. So please guys, tell me why I'm wrong here.
My problem is similar to what we kind of said earlier, is like past a certain point, it's like how the Vegas lines, there's no value. There's no value in Alonzo Menafield. I'm looking at him by finish, minus 170. What? I can't do it.
Round one knockout plus 150.
Man, but he could get a submission, apparently.
Of course,
he just pulled a Von Fluke choke. So that's what I'm saying. I would feel so dumb to watch him choke out Ed Herman and place some money on him by knockout just because that's where the value was. And let's just be honest. We're all ready to write off Ed Herman, and maybe we should. But Ed Herman is a veteran. He showed that resiliency to get through Mike Rodriguez. I mean, I guess his win against Ibrahimov means nothing. And then the Patrick Cummins win is, you know, over 2 years ago. I just like Ed Herman because he did cash that Mike Rodriguez ticket for me, which would be a terrible way to bet or to feel. But I like Ed Herman. So, you know, tough three with Michael Bisping. I mean, he's been around forever. So I like to give him the veteran shake, the what if it gets past round one and Alonzo gasses out shake. But what is Ed Herman's gas tank? What is his chin? Can he get a finish? He's going to outpoint him with volume. you're probably right. Herman is probably dead in the water. But I don't know. I don't know if I can pull the trigger. Lucrative, talk me into something here.
Yeah, this is actually one of the fights I haven't got around to taping yet. And you can probably, you know, guess why I haven't got around to taping this fight, why I've left it to one of the last fights. Because
I didn't tape it either, honestly.
Yeah, because it's not like... It's not a fight where I sat back and when I looked at the card like I do before every week, you know, before I tape any fights, I look at the card and I go, okay, what do I want to tape first? What's going to take me the most time? What lines do I like? What do I want to get into first? And I was like, let me put this one on the back burner because in my opinion, I don't need to do too much tape to know what's going to happen in this fight or to have an opinion. Basically, Alonzo, you know, round one, that's going to be Alonzo throughout his whole career, right? He's never, ever won a fight past the 30-second mark of round two. All of his wins are within the first 5 minutes, 30 seconds of the fight, right? And only two of them fights out of like 10 wins have got into the second round. Like all the other ones are first round finishes. So look, if he's kind of, it seems like he's round one or bust, right? If he doesn't get a finish over Ed Herman in round one, look, Ed Herman might Grootsmacher Rafa Garcia him, you know, he might come back and he might win the fight. So yeah, I can't give you a great breakdown because I haven't done the tape, but I will say that it's kind of obvious. It's either Menafield in round one, and then if not, it's going to get sketchy.
See, it's exactly what you said. That Rafa Garcia Grootsmacher fight is what nightmares are made of for MMA cappers on Twitter because they think that they know something or they see, right? Everybody was talking Rafa by knockout. Yeah. Dude has one knockout in his professional career. What tape are we watching? So yeah, like this narrative gets built and you start thinking so much and all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, that guy's actually a professional fighter too. And you know, a performance is a performance. As much as we like to put stock into tape, like they're individual days. It's not like baseball where you're going in the next day. It's like these, they're years, there's months, so much time and prep between these fights. So I have no idea the mental fortitude. I have no idea what Ed Herman is at. Is this a retirement fight? Is this just a check for him? Is he just finishing out his contract like a quote unquote like a man would? Like I have no idea where he's at. So I have no interest in playing Alonzo Menafield at Chalky McChalk. So
yeah, I mean, I have heavy plays all on the main card, so there's no need to go heavy here.
I mean, minus 350, silly bet at Chalk, really. How can you be laying minus 350 on a fighter who's never won after 5 minutes and 30 seconds? If you want to bet Alonzo, just bet him in the first round. Now, he's probably going to go out there and get a second round finished, and then I look stupid. By the end of the day, we're not talking about, you know, one fight random outcomes. We're talking about long-term. And look at long-term Alonzo's career. The guy's only lost after it gets past 5 minutes, 30 seconds. Not 8-9 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 seconds. The guy's never won after that, you know? But he's only got two losses against Devin Clark and Ovin St. Preux, so it's not like, you know, he is blowing everyone else out of the water, really. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how Ed Herman reacts if he doesn't get stopped. But, yeah, that's it.
Lucrative, what you said sparked my thought. As I look on FanDuel, I love that they do the round grouping. Alonzo Menafield, round one or two, minus 105.
Yeah, not bad. If you want to play Alonzo, definitely take that instead of taking his minus 350 money line. I doubt he's winning the decision or winning in round three here.
Yeah,
if Ed Herman escapes 10 minutes, then he's probably going to escape the last five, right? I mean, Alonso's going to be fucked at that point.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, there's no questioning the cardio issues, and that's kind of why he ran straight into Ovince St. Preux to get knocked out, is he's gassing out trying to chase him around the octagon. But, yeah, I think we've talked enough about that one, and it seems like we got one more what I would qualify as like a greasy fight before we get into the real good ones here. So we got Vince Morales, 9-5, 1-3 in his UFC career, versus Draco Rodriguez, 7-2, coming off a brutal knockout to Ayman Zahabi in his debut. And man, what a counter. Absolutely out before he hits the ground. Zahabi almost lands a couple extra ground and pound shots on him for good measure. But yeah, so Draco had a horrible weight cut. Really didn't look good out there, was a stronger play of mine, and shows up just flat, you know, throwing a few leg kicks, but really just gets caught on the counter, sloppy, you know, lands a couple nice shots, but yeah, it was definitely cause for concern to see that off button he found it right on the chin. And Morales, in his career, I mean, he actually has a win over Zahabi himself a couple years ago, back in 2019.
He's the last guy to beat Zahabi, which I kind of find interesting.
Yeah, and he's got pretty solid boxing, I would say, Vince Morales. You know, he's lost a few fights. Gutierrez absolutely chewed up his leg. And, yeah, I don't think that Draco really has that type of approach. He's a little bit more boxing heavy. And then, you know, Song Yadong is a loss. It's really not such a bad one. And, you know, also a loss to Lopez there. You know, it's not the best, but not the worst either. So Morales, he's got all the experience as far as the UFC goes. But Rodriguez comes in with all the hype as this big contender series, you know, graduate. So, you know, I thought it was super interesting how he actually gets a sub on contender series where, you know, he's actually got the Golden Gloves background and amateur boxing and all that. 13-0 amateur record. You usually don't see it so extensive. So Rodriguez, just something smells a little fishy, and you see the line is like basically a pick'em, maybe opening up a little bit wider here, -115 now for Rodriguez. I'm not rushing to play him, but Morales coming off like a fractured leg and a broken orbital, so who knows where he's at exactly.
Yeah. I had no idea that Rodriguez had that extensive of injuries.
No, Morales.
Oh, yeah, because that's what you said, he had a fractured leg. I know he tore his Achilles last August.
It was all related to
Did he fracture his leg, or?
I think coming out of the fight he had fractures due to the kicks, but I didn't see that he tore his Achilles after.
So he
that,
tore though. His Achilles last August. That fight was in, when was that fight? That fight was in May. That fight was in May, so he was training and he tore his Achilles. Shout out to Alex Bahunin for the interview, I believe. So he tore his Achilles and has been since recovering. Honestly, Gutierrez in that fight, Chris Gutierrez, I mean, he put on an absolute clinic. I mean, he looked fantastic. Sharp from 30 seconds in, he looked sharp. What I found interesting for Morales was that he said that he was frustrated with his lack of output versus Benito Lopez in July 2019, and then came out versus Gutierrez and still had a lack of output and then got finished via leg kicks in the second round. So I have no idea what Vince Morales actually has to offer the UFC at this point. I think that it's could be mildly concerning for him in his career, especially after an injury that would put like a basketball player's career possibly on notice. Draco had the terrible weight cut in his Dana White Contender Series debut, cost me some money, gotta love that. Got KO'd in round one versus Zahabi, like we discussed. You know, not really much to gain from that. I hope that he got his jitters out of the way and comes out and gives a better fight here. Like we did already say as well, this fight is hopefully the last of the greasiness. I don't really know who I'm going to pick. I probably lean Draco, like the odds are kind of leaning, but my one play, I guess, would be, the fight not to go the distance at +100. I don't think that the fight goes the distance. I think that either guy could really get the finish. I think that Draco's chin obviously could be shot. And I wonder about Vince's durability. So, and Draco has only been to the distance once. That I do know.
Yes.
No.
Yes. No,
yes.
I'm just saying I agree. I don't know.
Yes, thank you.
Specifically that. He I has. Agree on your breakdown.
He has.
Okay.
Thank you.
I agree on your bet as well, because as you guys know, I have a handicap in service, right? So all my bets are behind the paywall, though I put out a lot of free content. My official bets are behind the paywall, but I'll say live on the podcast now that that is a bet I will be sending out to my members soon. Wow. The fight doesn't go to decision on the Vince Morales and Draco Rodriguez fight. So I haven't sent it out yet because the full prop odds for the preliminary card are not available on, you know, virtually all bookmakers. And I actually wait for the full prop odds to be released on most bookmakers before I send it out to my members. I know a lot of people don't do that, but morally it's right. You know, I have to wait till the lines are widely available before I send them out, you know. So I'm just waiting for that to come out and then I will be locking it in. So I agree with a lot of what you said. You know, I echo the sentiment. I mean, both fighters are aggressive. Both fighters are strikers. So they're going to come forward. They're going to throw in the pocket. And I just feel like this fight, you know, Draco Rodriguez hasn't had the experience that Vince Morales had. Obviously, in his last fight, he got knocked out clean with one shot by Ayman Zahabi. And then if you look at Vince Morales, he actually went to a decision with Ayman Zahabi and he won that decision, right? So you would think that Vince Morales, you know, MMA math doesn't work, but it was, you know, you would think that if a guy just get knocked out in 3 minutes by the guy who he's fighting now has already beat, you know, potentially you would lean more on that Morales side. And I guess I probably do lean a bit more on the Morales side. There might be questions on Ayman Zahabi's chin now. Not Ayman Zahabi, on Draco Rodriguez's chin. But, you know, he's only lost one time before. It was a stoppage, but it was against Tony Gravely, and it was in round 5, you know. But Tony Gravely's more of a wrestler. Well, he is a complete wrestler. So maybe, you know, I didn't actually go back and watch that fight. I've watched a few more of his recent fights. But, yeah, look, I think the fight's just going to be, like, pretty scrappy, and I think someone's going to go down. Because the plus number is there, that's why I like the play. If it wasn't a plus number, if it wasn't an underdog number, I wouldn't be playing it, right? So I'm not like hugely confident. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, you know, 70% of the time. But I am leaning that, you know, 55 to 60% of the time, somewhere in that range, this fight probably ends inside the distance, right? Now, will it be one of them 55, 60% on the weekend? We'll find out, right? Will it be the 40%? Maybe. But I just think at that plus number, it's a pretty decent play, right? Especially because we're getting the full 15 minutes, right? So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to lean on the Vince Morales side. I'm going to say he's able to put him out. But then again, I would not be surprised to see Draco get, you know, some sort of submission or even a stoppage over, you know, Vince Morales. He seems very tough, Vince. He did go 15 minutes with Yudong Song. He took some shots in that fight. So maybe he won't get the stoppage with strikes to the head. But, you know, he has been stopped via leg kicks before. Draco does throw very, very heavy. He throws everything into his strikes, Draco Rodriguez, right? So I think that, you know, he does throw heavy leg kicks as well, specifically the leg kick. He throws heavy. So that'll be interesting to see if he can, you know, compromise Vince Morales. And then obviously Vince Morales has a submission loss on his record. So Draco is pretty slick with the submissions. It's very hard to cap Draco, in my opinion. So with the money line, I think you kind of got to be playing Morales just because we've seen more of him. You know, we've seen him at higher level. But Draco could come out and surprise some of us here. So I'm not, you know, rushing to bet Vince, even though I do think he probably gets the win. I haven't seen a lot from Draco in his tape. He hasn't fought the high level of competition. He hasn't gone 3 rounds a lot of the time. I don't really know his style yet. For me, it's hard to cap him. So, yeah, again, I'll go for Vince to get the win inside the distance.
Love it.
I definitely think that makes sense.
And I'm glad that I could get you to, you know, release the curtain a little bit. You know, even a blind squirrel can find a nut. So I kind of like the same thing, that it was plus money. So I'm really happy to stumble upon that and force you to show your hand a little bit. So I not force you, but I appreciate that you did. So thank you.
Of course, yeah. Hopefully we both cashed.
Yeah, I'd love it. Would love
it. Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, it's nice that we had a little bit of discourse there. Seems like, now, I'm still leaning the Rodriguez side. We got a lucrative lean in the Morales side. Not so heavy there, but I think we can all agree on that prop play. So, you know, shout out to the people listening, because that's how you're going to get this free pick here. You know, I'm not going to timestamp it. You got to be listening, guys. So that's the key. So now we move along. Guys, this is one that I'm just so excited for. I love a Bobby Green fight, because Bobby Green is just so much fun to watch. He's talking out there, hands down, counters, head movement, and he can use a little bit of wrestling too to scrap it up. I love a guy like that. And then he comes in against one of the most exciting new fighters in the UFC. He's already 3-1. A pretty disappointing loss in his debut to Magomed Mustafayev, as far as like an expectation standpoint. But those spinning kicks and just the timing of Mustafayev, and yeah, I mean, I'm willing to excuse him on that one coming in, Rafael Fiziev. But then he comes out, just puts on absolute performances against Alex White, Jacasey, and Renato Moicano. Finally gets his first UFC knockout against Moicano. And say what you want about his chin, he's still a high-level fighter. And it was good to see Fiziev come out there and really put it on. Now 28 years old, he's one of the head coaches over at Tiger Muay Thai. He does have the same striking coach as the Shevchenko sisters, master sports, hand-to-hand combat and kickboxing, over 200 amateur kickboxing bouts, 39-8 kickboxing record. But he does back it up with a little bit of combat sambo background and the BJJ blue belt. You could see that in his fights against Jacasey, where he's initiating some of the clinch, underhooks, trips, takedowns. And then Jacasey goes to shoot on him. He's got some reactive hips. And I know Jacasey's not a wrestler, and that's why, you know, Fiziev does show a bit of an advantage there. You know, I don't think he's going to have that type of advantage here against Bobby Green. So straight up, if this thing stays on the feet, which I do expect it to for the most part, just given both of their abilities to stuff the takedowns and their hips and the ability to really maintain distance, you know, so if this ends up a distance striking affair, I just think Fiziev has so much more power in his hands, throws the body head combinations. I mean, we've heard those kicks when it was, you know, no crowd and just echoing throughout the arena. Whereas Bobby Green, he's going to point you up, piece you up, keep distance, you know, try to move his head and counter. But we saw in the Thiago Moises fight that, you know, he's not beyond getting opened up with some cuts, caught by some head kicks, and it's definitely concerning when you're going to be facing someone that's not afraid to take a punch to deal out two or three in combination. I know the line is a bit wide as far as when you look at the UFC experience between the two of them, but just looking at the skill disparity and the power disparity in the stand-up, I have to strongly lean Rafael Fiziev -280 over Bobby Green, who comes in at +225.
Yeah, listen, the line certainly agrees with you. I don't want to take anything away from Fiziev, because he really does seem to be like he could be the real deal. I just feel like Bobby Green is that guy that tends to fight to the level of his competition, whoever that may be. So he'll fight down, he'll fight like he just fights to the level of who he's fighting. I also feel like Fiziev and Green, like Fiziev will make a fight more difficult than it needs to be because of his fighting style. One of the things that MMA by the numbers had pointed out was that while Fiziev's striking accuracy is super high, he focuses more on leg kicks, which are an inherently more accurate strike to throw. So it makes me wonder, with Bobby Green, who's so good at getting in and getting out of range, who has such veteran experience going the distance, who we've said multiple times on this podcast could have possibly beaten Thiago Moises in that last fight. I don't I don't know. Like, the line is, like, you're paying a premium for Fiziev here. So it makes me not want to. Minus 320, he's minus 320 for a guy that we don't expect to get a finish. Those things inherently, we've talked about that before as well. Like, I don't really like that. When you're a guy that's minus 300, minus 400, minus 500, you should be cutting through your opponents. So do we think that he gets a finish, or do we think it could go the distance? Because I think it could go the distance. And if it goes the distance, I think it has a chance to be greasy, because we know that the judges are barely watching these fights. So what I see is, will the fight go the distance? Yes, at minus 146, minus 150. I think that's an interesting way to find a little bit of value. Otherwise, Fiziev should be a parlay piece. He should win. You know, I would be really remiss to think that Bobby Green, you know, outpoints him. But I mean, listen, he could do some wrestling. He could outpoint him. Fiziev could get tired. He's not a veteran. We can't bank on him like that. He doesn't have Usman cardio or something like it. We don't really know. So we do know that Bobby Green is the king of decisions, and we know that Bobby Green comes to fight. With that being said, before we hand it on to Lucrative, one of the things I find extremely important is that Green was supposed to fight Jim Miller in February, but collapsed backstage due to weight cut problems. So how does he look now? Is he taking his weight cut more seriously? Is he more prepared? How's he going to look on the scale? I'm glad that he wasn't one of those guys that jumped right back in there 3 weeks later to try to get a fight, but it's certainly a concern of mine. So let's hand it to Lucrative.
Yeah, this is an absolute banger, man. We're getting Bobby Green, who's always in bangers. You know, anytime he fights is an exciting fight. And then he's fighting Rafael Fiziev, man, who's coming in with a lot of hype around his name, a lot of hype around his line too, minus 334 on a lot of the books. I know you said minus 280, which is a lot better. If you can get him sub minus 300, I think that's a lot better than where he is currently at on some of the other books, minus 334, you know, edging up towards that minus 350 range. You know, once people start putting him in their parlays closer to the fight night, he probably will hit that minus 350 range. Yeah, look, obviously I favor Rafael Fiziev, okay? This was a coin flip. I'm going to favor Rafael Fiziev, but there is a lot of positives on a Bobby Green side. One thing that is interesting, you know, without saying everything you guys have said, another point that I think about this fight is pretty interesting. Whether it will matter to the final decision is not why I'm saying it, but one of the things I think is interesting is that Rafael Fiziev, if he has shown any holes in his striking, it's in the boxing range, right? He's obviously got very good kicks at distance. He's a Muay Thai coach over there at Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand. You know, I just posted on my Twitter yesterday, him and Peter Yan going at it. Or I think it was earlier today, him and Peter Yan going at it. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful to see. There's quite a few videos out there, him and Peter Yan sparring. It's very, very high level sparring. So that's always good to watch. But yeah, you know, he's a Muay Thai guy, right? So usually with Muay Thai fighters, they have very good kicks. But their hands are a little bit lacking. You know, if he was to say anything is lacking, it would be their hands. And it's no different for Fiziev, right? When he fought DKC, he was chopping the legs. He was chopping the body. You know, he was hurting him. But DKC, towards the end of the second round, he started landing with that straight hand. He started landing with the jab. And he was finding his range there. And he was actually landing quite a lot on that second round. So much so that DeCase's corner actually said, look, it might be 1-1. We don't know. And I don't 100% disagree with that. I think I give the round to Fiziev, but definitely DeCase, you know, could have swayed some judges. DeCase definitely could have swayed at least one of the Houston judges, because that's where we're going back. So just a word of warning. Last time we was in Houston, Texas, the judging was absolutely atrocious. It was very scary, in fact. So if you are banking on fighters to win and you think they're going to win via decision, just, you know, just be aware that you might get robbed, right? So anyway, back to the fight. I think, you know, Fiziev definitely is a little bit lacking in the boxing range, right? I think he's an amazing fighter, but I'm trying to take a different angle breaking down this fight. He's obviously a good boxer, but I do think Bobby Green potentially has the advantage in the boxing. Look, this is an MMA fight. It's not a boxing fight, right? But I do think Bobby Green can land that straight hand, can land. You know, Bobby Green's boxing is pretty good. His fundamentals is good. It's what won him the fight against Lando Vannata last time out. You know, not last time out, but three fights ago now. But in their rematch a couple years ago, or last year, I believe it was, I had a bet on Bobby Green there, and he was a decent underdog. I think I bet him by decision at like plus 240, which was a little bit crazy, you know, because I thought he was going to win the fight. And then I definitely didn't really think he was going to finish Lando. His boxing won him that fight, right? The fundamentals. So I think that he's going to be able to land on Fizayev in this fight. But ultimately, I do favor Fizayev. I think he's going to be able to land more. I think he's going to be able to land more volume because of the kicking range. Obviously, he doesn't have to be all the way in when he lands the kicks. And, you know, he could hurt Bobby upstairs because although Bobby's very tough, we have seen him obviously get knocked out by Dustin Poirier. That was a long time ago. But the way he got knocked out was very similar to the way Fizayev knocked out his last opponent, Moicano. It was with that left hook right by Poirier. So, you know, even though Fizayev did land a couple of shots before that, he could come over with a left hook. So I think that it's going to be closer than what some people think. I do think Bobby will have his moments. I don't really think Bobby's going to be able to get his wrestling going, but I do think he'll have his moments on the feet with the boxing. But ultimately, I have to go with Fizayev. You know, even though he's kind of unproven, he has still beaten good guys in DeCasey and especially Moicano last time out. So, you know, one word of warning, not only we're going to the UFC 265 is in Texas. The judging might be bad, but also when these fighters are above minus 300 and they've only got 10 pro fights, just be careful with betting them. You know, I'm not saying that he shouldn't win this fight. I am saying he should win this fight, but we see it time and time again. These fighters are minus 300, minus 400, and they haven't had a lot of fights. You know, Bobby Green at this point has got three times the amount of fights. Bobby Green is a veteran of the fight game, you know. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that he's able to edge something out here. But ultimately, I'm going to go with Fizayev for a decision win, probably.
See, I love that you said that. We're a relatively new show, but one of the things that we've talked about through doing this show is exactly what you said. It's not just, is a fighter going to win or not? It's like, is the fighter good enough to deserve this number? Are they ever good enough to be minus 300, minus 400? And it's one of the philosophies that put TB heavy on Malcolm Gordon, right? I mean, it's just, yeah. Does Figueiredo deserve to be minus 300? No, of course not. That's ridiculous. So we end up on the right side. There were a bunch of dogs on that card. Thank you. There were a bunch of dogs on that card that we hit on for pretty much those exact reasons. So thank you for saying something like that, because that's something that we try to preach to our followers.
I will counter that is that in this specific fight, I mean, we look at a guy like Figueiredo, like you mentioned, or these other guys where it's like Ponzinibbio coming off a huge layoff, minus 300 against Lee. But Fizayev just gives me the feel that he's a legitimate striker, a legitimate prospect that is well-rounded, has shown the ability to go the distance and win by finish. And while I don't necessarily expect him to get a finish in this fight, and there is the possibility of some sketchy judging, it's not my play of the day, but Fizayev is going to be one leg of a two-leg parlay where I don't feel like it's worthy laying the hammer, but it just seems so obvious that he should win to me that he has to be the first leg. So we'll finish off as we get a little bit later on my parlay, but that's going to be a lighter one. It's not a play of the day type of the deal.
And look, I don't
like it. We like those parlays.
He definitely looks like he's the real deal, right? As I said, he's beat two good guys in DeCasey and Moicano, especially knocking out Moicano like that, right? If you knock out Moicano, you're a high-level fighter. It is what it is. You go in the upper echelon of the division, man. So Fizayev definitely should get the win here, man.
I feel that. I feel it. And that really is what it is that, you know, there are plenty of reasons to be sketched out by the number that's presenting on the line and why not to throw the hammer on it. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the straight pick goes, it seems obvious. So let's get on to one that, you know, the bookmakers don't seem to think is so obvious. Right now I'm seeing a minus 110, minus 110. We got Casey Kenney versus Song Yadong. This is going to be one hell of a matchup. I mean, I think that some of the natural advantages that Song Yadong was giving up to Phillips in his last fight against Kyler Phillips, you know, don't necessarily present themselves as far as like the agility, quickness, length, and just overall speed So while Kenny to me is like a much more well-rounded, experienced, gritty fighter with like great striking on all levels, I love that he goes to the body really well. He goes up top. He will throw out leg kicks. He has cardio. He's shown all the things that you would want to see, but Song Yadong throws some hammers. And you talk about judging being a little sketchy, things that might catch the judge's eyes. I mean, Song Yadong outlanded Kyler Phillips in their fight at the end of the day. And even though he loses the first couple rounds, I mean, he's pouring it on there late. So I do think that while I was seriously considering, like, you know, Casey Kenny as like a huge play, I'm just worried if this goes to the scorecards that, you know, Song Yadong might get a little bit more credit than is due for the type of power that he'll land with. But I mean, like, realistically for me, I do think that Kenny is the more well-rounded and better fighter overall. So as far as a straight pick and probably a small money line play, if it stays even, I'll take Casey Kenny here myself.
I happen to really like Casey Kenny in this spot. I actually think that there's some value at the money line at minus 110. I'm not really sure why it's a pick'em fight. Maybe I don't give Song Yadong enough credit and I could end up regretting that. But to me, I'm just not impressed with Song Yadong really, but he seems very middling, very mediocre to me. Yeah, I know he's like a pretty young prospect. He's got some good power. There's nothing that has really jumped off the tape to me in terms of what Song Yadong is going to do game plan wise, style wise, that's going to throw Casey Kenny off his game or to win the fight. So, you know, when you see somebody like Song Yadong lose to Kyler Phillips in that last fight, we just lost Kyler Phillips lose to Paiva. So that, like, in a fight that he probably should have won, he's just playing with his food and gasses out and has this unorthodox style and doesn't have the veteran fight IQ. Just really, just not a good showing. So that loss to Song Yadong, that Song Yadong loss looks even worse for him now. And then you look at that Marlon Vera fight. Did he win that fight though? Right? Wasn't that one of those really sketchy fights? I'm not sure that he won that fight. So he should really be on a 2-fight losing streak? I don't know about that. Then you get me a pick'em odds against a guy that took Dominic fucking Cruz, kind of our doppelganger here of lucrative. In a good way, you're both handsome gentlemen.
Take that, you know, all day. My mic's on mute for the guys listening. I'll take that all day, man. Dom Cruz, bro. That's a great comparison.
You guys are absolute twins. That's so funny. But I mean, took Dominic Cruz, one of the best bantamweights of all time, to a split decision where I, you know what I mean? Maybe because I was holding the Kenny ticket. Like, I'm not convinced that Cruz won that fight for sure. I think he did. He probably won the first two. But damn close fight. Casey Kenny showed himself to be, a force in this division. You know, he was. So that's what I'm saying. What are the odds telling you? He's pick'em odds with Dominic Cruz, loses a close-ass fight, and now he's pick'em odds with Song Yadong? What am I missing here? Something is not adding up. So I'm in on Casey Kenny. I'm in on Casey Kenny by decision. One of the things I have written down, which is super funny, especially because of these Texas judges, FanDuel offers these new props. For this fight to be a split or majority decision is plus 330. So I think that for whatever it is, the judges are going to find a way to fuck it up. So I like that too. But I think Casey Kenny is actually one of my stronger feelings plays, especially in terms of line value. Lucrative, finish us off here, buddy. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, so I am on the Kenny side as well. I'm not as convicted as you. I do give more credence to Song as a prospect in general. And then even in this matchup, you know, I think just speaking on the Song side, obviously both you guys like Kenny. I like Kenny as well. So just to give Song some credence in this fight specifically, Kenny's, you know, there to be hit. You know, that's his game. He's got a great chin. He walks forward. He's not got great defense. Song does hit very hard. His power hasn't translated as to what it could potentially be because he did get that massive knockout. It was very brutal, one of the worst knockouts you'll see in the bantamweight division a few years ago, but then, you know, since then he hasn't really knocked anyone out. Obviously gone to decision mainly, but he has been fighting decent fighters. I think Kyla Phillips, good fighter. I think Marlon Vera, obviously Cody Stamen. But, you know, Song is very accurate. He's got very, very, very good boxing, very athletic. And I do think he'll have his opportunities here to land on Casey Kenny hard. Now, if Casey Kenny had shown any vulnerability in his chin, I probably would bet Song Yudong, because I do think that, as I said, he's going to be able to land on him. But Casey Kenny's just shown a great chin, you know, for a long time now. And obviously, even though Song does look like he hits very hard, he's only got one knockout in the UFC. You know, he's got more than one knockout. He's got two knockouts in the UFC. But, you know, both of them knockouts were against guys who, in my opinion, are nowhere near the level of Casey Kenny. You know, Alejandro Perez might not be the worst fighter, but he's not Casey Kenny's level, right? So I think Casey Kenny is probably going to have to not necessarily weather a storm, but at least weather punches, right? Weather a certain amount of strikes from Yudong. But if he does do that, which I do think he's going to do, he's going to probably be throwing more volume. He's going to be throwing he's going to be the one who's more active, right? So even though Song will throw a spinning back kick every now and then, a very solid high kick, he doesn't pump out the amount of volume that Casey Kenny does. So if it does go to decision, I am favoring Casey Kenny to be just basically doing more, and then he'd probably get the win there. So yeah, look, I'm going to go with Casey Kenny. If Casey Kenny hadn't fought Dominic Cruz, then I wouldn't be probably picking Casey Kenny here. I'd probably either pick Song or not at all, but like you, Guru, I do think that him going to decision and potentially, you know, it was a close fight. You know, I do think he lost, but it was a close fight. Even just his showing in that fight kind of proved to me that he is at this upper echelon. You know, he's definitely at that high level. But Cruz was coming off like a 4-year, or what was it? It was from the Henry Cejudo fight. He was coming off quite a long layoff, right? I mean, I think it was maybe actually not that long. It was only like a year after that Cejudo fight, right?
I think it was a little less than a year, possibly. Yeah. But the idea was that obviously Cejudo was so many levels ahead, and that it was was the layoff since before the Cejudo fight was so long. So it was just like,
Exactly.
What were you really going to get from Cruz?
That's really what I meant. So it was 10 months after the Cejudo fight, but obviously, the Cejudo fight was, you know, 4 years. He was off for 4 years, right? So I guess my point was that, you know, maybe Dominic Cruz is kind of past it. You know, maybe, you know, he was off for 4 years, come back, loses to Cejudo, beats Casey Kenny, close fight. But still, even Casey Kenny hanging in there for 3 rounds and doing what he did, it definitely showed me another side to Casey. So I'm going to go with Casey to win via decision. But I do think Song's going to have his chance to land here. So I will say that as a little caveat. But I think Casey Kenny, 60-ish percent is, you know, it's fairly accurate. So there is potentially some value on the line.
Casey by decision plus 150.
He's not going to stop Song. Basically certain he's not going to stop Song. If you watch that Kyla Phillips fight, Kyla Phillips lands a 100% head kick on Song, and literally Song's head doesn't move. You know, I've never seen anything like it. Go back and watch that fight. It's in the first round. It is an like absolute a brick. Crazy head kick, and Song just has an insane chin. So Casey Kenny, if you're betting him, in my opinion, more value on the decision line, like you said.
It just seems like the only value, like, it's just the value in this fight is so weird, because the odds makers don't think that Song Yudong wins by decision either. Casey Kenny by decision plus 150, Song Yudong by decision plus 225. Song Yudong by KO, which you probably saying is possibly his most likely path, would be plus 350. So it's like they don't really think that he's going to win, do they?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think that part of the reason Kenny struggled so much in the Cruz fight was the movement, the awkward, you know, back and forth. And then he's changing levels on you, and you do have to worry about Cruz's wrestling. You know, it's legit. So I do think that there's a lot less to worry about overall. But what you do have to worry about coming back from Song is the power. So, yeah, the chin has looked great. You know, he's lost all of his 3 career losses by decision. So it's not like he's not beyond losing by decision. But look at the names. Dominic Cruz, Merab Dvalishvili. And sure, he lost a contender series fight by split decision. But, you know, I don't see this ending inside the distance. And it's pretty clear who should take the victory if it goes that way. So right on to our next fight, where we actually have a rematch here from 6 years ago.
Everybody was clamoring for, by the way.
That's right. The fans were booing all fight just to make sure that they got their rematch. So I think we've actually seen a lot of career development, especially from Angela Hill, coming up against Tisha Torres, who really has even transformed her game as she's faced some of the higher level opponents. She's come out a little bit more high output and aggressive against the lower level opponents she's gotten to face in Brianna Van Buren and Sam Hughes. Now, coming back in a rematch, I do think it's going to be a lot different from their original matchup. Angela Hill's takedown defense, clinch work, and overall ability to avoid being held down is a big difference from their first matchup. You know, there are obviously opportunities where when she gets a little gassed, we did see Watterson get her down at one point. We did see Gedalia get her down for a round, but we haven't seen it turn into like the two rounds, the three rounds of control that Hill might have given up in the past. And I do think she does a better job actively stuffing and making sure that she can stay standing. But the power is not really there for either fighter. Between them, we got 16 decisions, 11 wins and 5 losses for Torres that have gone to decision. And Angela Hill, 8 decision wins and 7 decision losses. So there's a reason why this fight's projected to go the distance. I just think that the dog is calling on me in this spot. It's probably a horrible idea. Just like,
no, dogs it's like,
I just feel like Angela Hill comes in incredible shape. So does Torres as per usual. So I don't think we're going to see anybody get finished here, and we shouldn't. And I just think that Hill's ability in the stand up has improved so much from her first fight against Torres as well. She's running around, chasing her around the octagon and like with zero planning or footwork. And really she's getting touched up in the first fight. And when she lands a tiny bit, Torres starts initiating the takedown. So I don't think that's here as much this fight.
I think this fight is really interesting for both fighters in terms of where their career trajectory will go after this fight. I think it's kind of an interesting crossroads that they meet up again for this rematch. Tisha Torres, honestly, but like you said perfectly, both fighters have made, I think, massive improvements to their striking game, to their overall fight game. But when you look at Tisha Torres, like, why is she a favorite here? She got a stoppage victory versus Sam Hughes, a fighter that she, like, you know, again, maybe shouldn't have been matched up against. And the decision win against Brianna Van Buren, who's arguably, you know, a level lower and was certainly two levels lower than anybody she had fought before that, being Andrade, Jędrzejczyk, Welly Zhang, and Marina Rodriguez going into that. So they kind of softballed her a win. They kind of softballed her a second win. When you look at Angela Hill, tell me if this Vegas math adds up. Angela Hill is a -140 favorite against Michelle Watterson. Loses a really close split decision, one that we could still probably debate to this day. Then she goes and she fights Ashley Yoder as a moderate favorite, wins, you know, pretty much pillar to post that fight. Now she's an underdog. I mean, listen, I know styles make fights and all. I just don't, why would this fight not be pick'em? What am I missing? I don't think that Torres is going to utilize her grappling so, like, she's not all of a sudden turn into Tisha Usman and going to shoot takedowns and maul her on the ground. I think that Tisha's actually maybe fallen in love with her hands a bit and will want to keep it at kickboxing range. So yeah, dogs, like I said to you before, the dogs are barking here to me. It's dog or pass. Can't pay a premium on Torres unless you're just betting her to win the distance. I mean, to win by decision. I have a feeling we're going to get lucrative on our side of here again. So let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, I am. I'm on the Angela Hill side here. I'm on the underdog. I don't know where she's an underdog, like you said. I mean, I'm guessing that she's an underdog because of how their first fight went. Obviously, she lost the first fight. So I guess that's just baked into the line here, you know. But if you go back to that fight, that was Angela Hill's second fight. You know, she's making a second fight in her whole career. And now, I think this is going to be her 23rd fight, right? So, I mean, just dramatic difference. And I'm just going to have to fact check myself because that seems pretty crazy that she's had 21 fights since that fight. But
She's so active. What did she beat Cerrone's record, right? She had like 8 fights in 2 years or something. She's sick.
So she was 2-0 officially. Yeah, she was 2-0, and that was only in 2015. So her second fight was in 2015. And you fast forward just 6 years, 2021, and now she's having her 23rd fight. So she's had 21 fights in 6 years, which is absolutely crazy. And all of these have been in the UFC or Invicta. They haven't been in these regional scenes where she's blowing bums out of the water in 30 seconds and then she fights another month. 21 fights in 6 years is legit, man. And she needed to get going because of her age, right? So, yeah, man, I think a lot's changed since then. The most dramatic improvement on any fighter, obviously Tisha's made a lot of improvements. Tisha was only 5-0 at that point, right? It's not like Tisha was this veteran. You know, she was only 5-0, but Ange was 2-0. I think the biggest improvement that we can say is just Angela's takedown defense, man. She was coming into the MMA game, UFC game, as an out-and-out Muay Thai fighter. You know, if you hear her on a Joe Rogan podcast, she was a Thai fighter. That's how she got into fighting. She just, I believe she just got in just to start, you know, just to get in shape, and then she fell in love with it. I think that was her story. But she was definitely a Muay Thai fighter, right? And she's not a Muay Thai fighter now. She's a good MMA fighter. You know, she stuffed like 10-plus takedowns against Michelle Waterson. Tisha Torres isn't the best takedown artist in the game. So it leads me to believe that, look, Tisha might be able to get her down once or twice, but I don't think she's going to be able to get considerable top time, control time. And so I do think the majority of this fight is going to play out on the feet. Who do I think is going to win the feet? I think Angela Hill will win on the feet. I do think Tisha Torres is a decent striker. She's not a bad striker at all. She can make this close. She can make some of the rounds close, even on the feet. But I think Angela Hill will do enough consistently. If these girls fight 100 times, I think Angela Hill would do enough on the feet to win this fight at a fairly decent clip. So having a plus number next to her name is pretty good. As you can tell, I'm taking Angela Hill to win. Taking Angela Hill via decision. Look, I'm not going to be super surprised if she, you know, she does lose, because it is only 3 rounds. We are in Houston.
And Tisha in Texas,
Yeah, exactly. Tisha could get a takedown or two, steal the round, but you know, I'm not saying Angela Hill should be minus 400 here, but I am saying Angela Hill should be at least minus 160 here. And I also am saying that plus 200 for Angela Hill decision is a stupid line. And if any of you can get on that, then I would suggest getting on that, because I don't really know why her decision line is plus 200, in my opinion.
So, Guru, what's it on FanDuel? I'll take a look on DraftKings real quick.
DraftKings is plus 180, and FanDuel is plus 195. So,
there we go.
Sounds like some value to me.
I locked it in plus 200 yesterday, so maybe it's been bet down since then, you know. But even plus 180 is decent for me.
Yeah, I'm going to take 195. I'll take a 5-cent loss.
Yeah, that's a live bet on the pod there, fellas. Sounds like we're hopping in on that, because once again, we come to a consensus. And really, I don't think it's because we're being lazy, more so than there's a lot of spots that really make sense here. And as you dig into the lines and everything else, I like we said, plus 200. I mean, that's one of the juiciest decision lines for a fight that's like minus 300 to go the distance, no? And so you're getting one of the fighters at a plus 200. I don't care if they're the underdog. That's unreal.
Yeah. I mean, do we really see Angela Hill finishing Tisha Torres? I mean, goddamn, I'd be very surprised if that happens, you know.
Tisha's about as tough as they come.
And Angela Hill, I agree. Wait, and she's not a finisher, you know. I mean, she couldn't finish Ashley Yoda, who basically just wanted out after 3 minutes last fight. So I don't think she's going to finish Tisha Torres, man. But we'll see. We'll see.
I feel that. Well, let's get on to the next fight, where I think we got some super strong plays here. So, you know, we broke some of our rules here. We were definitely talking before the podcast about this one, because, man, so we got Michael Chiesa, who has been really something else ever since moving up to the welterweight division, undefeated since moving up.
4-0.
And, just been super impressive, really coming into his own in his prime at 33 versus Vicente Luque, who is probably one of the top 5 most exciting fighters to watch on a consistent basis. I mean, it was only until recently that he started stumbling upon decisions in the UFC. He's got 8 knockouts, 4 submissions, and 1 decision as far as his victories in the UFC go. So Yeah, I mean, super impressive as far as just his ability to finish guys out there. And Luque is not afraid to trade. He'll take punches. He'll give them out. He'll get in grappling exchanges. But that's actually where things start to get interesting, is how many really great wrestlers has Vicente Luque fought? None. And Michael Chiesa, I mean, he's going to have a 2-inch height advantage. They have equal reach. Chiesa's got elite defense. He really doesn't get hit much in the striking once, you know, as long as he's able to maintain his range. And he's really seemed to got better and better ever since his move up. He's not worrying as much about the weight cut, maybe working a little more on his movement and striking defense. And, man, it's just super impressive watching him grapple out there. That pick we had with Chiesa over Magny, maybe it just left too sweet a taste in our mouth, but I mean, listen, we're seeing Chiesa again. I mean, we caught him as an underdog here at, what did we get, plus 105?
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying, I mean, it's the disrespect of Vegas, the disrespect of that line. We capped that Magny fight. That was one of our best plays, probably of the year even. We loved Michael Chiesa in that fight. And Chiesa just, I mean, Magny was supposed to be the better wrestler. Magny was supposed to have the length and the reach. Magny was supposed to be the better striker. That boy got whooped for 20 of 25 minutes, 22 or 25 minutes. I mean, he got whooped. Chiesa could have went for another five. I mean, he looked great. I think he maintains distance really well. I think he's got a decent chin. Like you said, I think it was something that I had pointed out to you earlier in the week. What wrestlers has Luque fought? Tyron Woodley? Yeah, right. Randy Brown? Nope. Nico Price? Don't make me laugh. Steven Wonderboy Thompson? Mike Perry? Brian Barberena? Jalen Turner? I'm sorry. Which one of these guys is a grappler? Oh, wait. None of them? Okay, cool. What? Like, so Michael Chiesa wins an insanely impressive fight against a top-level guy in the welterweight division perennially, and then he comes back 5 months later and he's still an underdog? Why? What? I don't get it. Like, Vicente Luque beats the brakes off of Tyron Woodley and Randy Brown, and now he deserves to be a favorite here? No. And that's why I think you've seen the line start to correct itself. But I think Vegas has maybe dug themselves in too big of a hole. I mean, listen, the way that I thought Chiesa should be like minus 140 or something. Like he deserves to be the favorite here. I think if Luque was a dog, I'd have to consider him a little bit harder. But Michael Chiesa at plus money was my dog of the day. He should win this fight, and he should win probably by decision. I like Chiesa by decision. Why is Chiesa by decision plus 240? That's who finishes Vicente Luque. So I just think that Chiesa wears on him. One of the things one of the things that I found super interesting, maybe it was because he wasn't expecting it. 10 seconds into the Woodley fight, Woodley has him clinched up against the cage with his hands locked behind his back. If you let Michael Chiesa do that at any point throughout this fight, you are going to the ground. So I'm betting that that will happen and that he's going to get dominated on the ground. What do you think, Lucrative?
We're either going to get completely destroyed by the bookies this weekend, or we're going to destroy the bookies, because, again, I am agreeing. I believe, yeah, I'm going with Michael Chiesa. So hopefully it's the latter. Hopefully we destroy the bookies. I think it was the latter. Yeah, so look, I think
whatever it was,
I hope we destroy the bookies. Yeah. I think Michael Chiesa obviously has the decent path to victory, like he does in every single fight he's ever fought. He's get the grappling going. You know, he's a huge lightweight now, welterweight, sorry. He was a lightweight. He was big then. Now he's still a massive welterweight. I have no idea how he was making 155 altogether, you know, like back in the day. But he made it consistently for a good period of time. He did miss it that one time, and then he moved up. So obviously, as he's gotten older, his body's filled out. His body doesn't want to do the weight cut anymore. And it was a good move, because since he's come to welterweight, he's been nothing short of perfect, you know. He fought Carlos Condit, submission in round two, Diego Sanchez, Rafael Dos Anjos, and then Neil Magny. The Neil Magny one was the one that impressed me the most. Obviously, Dos Anjos is a good win, but Dos Anjos is known to be taken down. You know, he can be grinded out. It's happened his whole career. But Neil Magny, that was a very good win. Definitely impressed me, especially seeing him go 25 minutes, you know. And as you said, Guru, it looked like he could go another 5 minutes. So he definitely didn't slow down in that fight. Look, this fight, it's a tough fight because Luque is a motherfucker, you know. Like, he is a great fighter. He's a great striker. He's a great submission fighter. He's got decent takedown defense. Like, he's an all-round great MMA fighter, you know. He's a top 10 welterweight, top 15, whatever you want to call him. He's a solid fighter, but we got to think about it stylistically. I do think Chiesa probably will be able to get his grappling going at points. You know, Chiesa's a lot better on the feet than he used to be, man. He used to be rushing in. Like, even a couple of years ago, if you go back to his Anthony Pettis fight, the dude, and that was obviously at lightweight, that was his last fight he's lost, actually, and he lost it by submission. He actually is running into Anthony Pettis in that fight. You know, he's just not hands down, but he's basically just running in. He's not a good striker, but in his last few fights, he's definitely impressed me more. Now, look, he's never going to be a striker, but I do think he's made some improvements in terms of his fight IQ, even if not in terms of his striking. So he's a lot more patient these days. He's calculated. He doesn't burn his wad just going crazy for the submission. But when he does get that body lock, when he does get, you know, wrists around you, wrist control, he will burn his wad. He will go crazy trying to get the takedowns. I think Vicente Luque, you know, will probably get taken down here. Is Chiesa going to keep him down? Maybe, maybe not. That is the worry there. If Chiesa isn't able to keep him down, Vicente could get back up to his feet and just steal the round, because obviously there is a big gap in the striking here. Vicente Luque is miles better than Chiesa in the striking. So if the fight is on the feet, Luque is going to be, you know, landing some solid offense. So Chiesa is going to have to be kind of perfect in this fight. You know, he can't really let Luque be on the feet for too long, because even if Chiesa is on top for 4 minutes, Luque could probably steal the round with a minute of striking. So Chiesa is going to have to definitely implement that wet blanket, you know, style here. He's going to, in my opinion, he shouldn't go for too many submissions, because I don't really think he's going to submit Luque. And if he is going for submissions, it opens him up for the possibility to be either reversed or submitted himself. This might be a little bit of a hot take, but I'm actually potentially more worried about Luque's submission than Luque TKO, because we've seen time and time again now, Chiesa is open to be submitted, right? He's definitely a good grappler, but he's not got great submission defense. Look, he's popped out of a couple of submissions, but he's been stopped in a lot of his losses. He's been submitted, right? Even in that Anthony Pettis fight, he crashed distance. He was able to get Anthony down. Anthony did hurt him on the feet, but Chiesa ended up on top, and then he got triangle choked, you know, by Anthony Pettis, obviously against, it was an armbar, right? Triangle armbar. Obviously against Kevin Lee, you know, what happened there? He got submitted. Kevin Lee.
Jorge Masvidal Darce choked.
Masvidal Darce choked him back in the day. So look, and other than that, he's been put in quite a few submissions. I believe Carlos Condit had him in a submission. So like, it's definitely live. Luque is a solid submission grappler, man. People don't really realize it because he's a stand-up guy. You know, he wants to knock you out. But he definitely can get a submission as well. Obviously, we saw that in his last fight, even though Tyrone was dinged at that point. But yeah, look, I think that's a decent fight for Chiesa. I don't mind him because he's a dog. But Luque is definitely a bad motherfucker. But my prediction is going to be Chiesa via decision in this one.
I love it. I think, just to maybe inflate a little bit more confidence back into that, because you did make a good case for Luque, as you should, because it's a damn close fight and a damn good one. Probably, you know, could win fight of the night here. Strikes landed per minute, 5.74. Strikes absorbed, 5.78. So he really does, not that Chiesa is going to be the guy to put that on, but he puts himself into danger to throw his strikes. He doesn't have fantastic striking defense. He's one of the best bad strikers in the UFC in that respect, because he is tough. He's a motherfucker. He keeps coming. He's got power, but he does put himself in some bad positions to do that. And as we also said, that he hasn't fought really any wrestlers, his takedown defense is still a pretty 65%. So
yeah, I mean, listen, so my ultimate thought was that I do think I completely agree with Lucrative that the grappling and wrestling of Luque is completely underrated. In fact, he has technically a higher rank in jiu-jitsu than than Chiesa.
Well, we've seen that before, right?
How many times have we seen
that the blue belt submit the
black belt? Not only that, but he does have a belt. But he also has a lucha libre background, which is a little bit more of catch wrestling. So it's not like it's an empty jiu-jitsu belt with nothing else behind it. We've seen him on the feet. We've seen all that. But while he faced Leon Edwards and goes to a decision, he actually won the first round with his wrestling on Leon Edwards, Vicente Luque. But he gassed the fuck out. If Chiesa is able to get into extended wrestling exchanges with Vicente Luque, who loves to strike, Luque will gas out again. And I think that's what makes me feel more comfortable, as when this fight gets out of the first round, there is going to be at least 2 minutes of clinch control time. Whether that turns into an outside trip and Chiesa is able to get it to the mat in the first round is the question in my book. But yeah, I'm sitting here with a 5-unit bet to start out, Michael Chiesa. I feel great playing that. I think he's got the cardio, the long game, and the fight IQ to make it happen.
That was the one thing I wanted to say, that he's never been knocked out. He had the one cut. And I also feel the few times that he had been submitted, which Lucrative was awesome in pointing out. Of course they were obviously at the lower weight class, which, cause he hasn't lost at welterweight, but I do feel like those submissions were like cardio based. Like, he gasses out, gets tired, makes a dumb decision, puts himself in a bad position, and is too tired to, you know, reverse or find a way out.
Sure. You know. I mean, and also, you know, he gets hurt by Pettis and then, ends up. So let's move right along.
Case of the dog of the day.
Yeah. Dog of the day for the Chronic Combat. We've already got it posted on Bet MMA Tips. So now for our co-main event of the evening. Talk about a veteran of the game. You got Jose Aldo making that move down at bantamweight, has shown to be able to do it multiple times. Now you got Pedro Munhoz, who has started to face the top level of competition. Aljamain Sterling was a decision loss, has a split decision to Frankie Edgar, then has an absolutely amazing performance against Jimmy Rivera, just slamming those calf kicks. And man, that really resonates in my memory. I really think that Munhoz is just so active, high pressure, throws so much more, and he throws with intent. While he doesn't have a ton of knockouts, we've seen him, you know, throw those boxing combinations and move forward. And Aldo, I feel like he's had the benefit of facing a few guys that like to take some time off in their fights. So, like, while he looks great against Marlon Moraes early, while he looks great against Peter Yan early, and he looks great against Chito Vera, those are some guys that don't necessarily put their foot on the gas immediately in round one. Munhoz is going to be coming out looking to swing and looking to get after it. And I think that Aldo, his cardio won't hold up this fight. And Munhoz is another short dog play of mine. I see him -105. And Aldo at -115. So I'm willing to get in there and take a chance on the dog, because while Aldo used to throw those leg kicks, Munhoz is the guy that's going to be taking advantage of him in this matchup.
Well, finally, we have a little bit of a disagreement, because I came into the week thinking I was going to be on Munhoz, but I found myself on Jose Aldo. I thought Aldo's performance against Chito Vera in his last fight was finally his best at the new weight class. I think he's really finally starting to settle in to the bantamweight division. He looked absolutely shredded. He was firing on all cylinders, smashing low kicks, fantastic combinations, throwing body shots, really mixing up the attack. We know that Chito's a bit of a slow starter and maybe kind of idolizes Aldo, like many of the Brazilian fighters do. So maybe he was a little awestruck, starstruck, maybe moved a little bit slower even still. Pedro Munhoz, man. Really interesting guy, interesting fighter. He's never been finished. He himself, of course, has the devastating leg kicks. I've thought that Munhoz at times can overthrow a bit and put himself in a bad position. Like, he overthrows himself out of position at times. He does take damage pretty decently. His face was pretty marked up from Jimmy Rivera still, even though Jimmy Rivera was really, Jimmy Rivera was like losing most of that fight, getting his leg basically chopped off. But Jimmy still put a little bit of pressure on him in that respect. that Frankie Edgar fight, whether you thought he won or lost, I don't know how much it matters. I don't think it aged very well. That's really close, tit for tat, kickboxing match with, you know, Frankie Edgar, the wrestler. Like, I don't love it. It doesn't inspire as much confidence. And the thing for me that put me back on Aldo, and maybe Lucrative will slam me back to earth here, I'm not sure what'll happen. But the thing with Aldo is that I don't know that Pedro Munhoz has something that Aldo's never seen before. Aldo has seen it all, fought it all, done it all. I don't know that Munhoz has some sort of X factor or has something up his sleeve so crazy that it's like he's not Peter Yan. He's not going to, you know what I mean? I don't know that he's elite in any area. I don't know what he's going to do to beat Aldo. So maybe that's a novice way of looking at it. But I lean Jose Aldo here. I like the Aldo in the over 1.5 plus 120. I think my favorite play of this is to just maybe stay away from either side. This fight is going the distance. So fight to go the distance at like minus 158, minus 160. I know that's not like the plus money plays that we love, but I don't think either guy is going to get the finish here. What do you think, Lucrative?
All right, this is probably my most anticipated fight of the evening, man. I can't wait for this one. You know, Jose Aldo looking solid at his new weight class, 135. And then obviously Pedro, he's a great fighter, man. He's been there, done it. You know, he's a veteran of the sport himself in his own right now. You know, he hasn't got the accolades that Aldo have got, but, you know, the guy's got over 20, but I think this is going to be his 25th fight. He's got multiple fights in the UFC, been in the UFC for forever, it seems like, you know. Got wins over solid fighters, Cody Garbrandt, got wins over Jimmy Rivera, Rob Font. Looking at his record now, that Frankie Edgar, I thought he won that fight. I think that should have been a win. Look, I see the fight breaking down. I'll be pretty quick. It's funny because both of these fighters, in my opinion, have the style to beat each other, right? And that's always exciting when I see that. So on the Aldo side, I think he's got the style to beat Pedro because his boxing is so much crisper. He's so much more accurate. He's so fast, more fast than him. He's so much faster. And I think he's going to be tagging Pedro, especially early, very, very heavily in that boxing range. You know, Pedro is there to be hit. He's a come forward fighter. So I think he's going to get hit hard by Aldo. And I know Pedro's chin's never been cracked, and I don't think it's going to crack here, but I wouldn't be surprised if he drops him in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised if he hurts him. And then on the other side, I think Pedro has the style to beat Aldo because obviously he's a pressure fighter. He's a come forward fighter. He's never going to stop. He throws loads of volume. He's going to gas you out, right? So if you're someone who gasses, which Aldo does gas these days, you know, even back in the day, he kind of gassed five round fights. He would slow down. But especially nowadays, he seems to be gassing a lot more. You know, he's just getting on. He's getting old. And Pedro is not the type of fighter you want to gas against, right? I think this fight definitely comes down to how much damage Pedro can do early, because I think it's, you know, I'm pretty confident in saying Pedro wins the third round at a fairly high clip. And then I'm also not as confident, but I'm still kind of confident that Aldo wins the first round at a fairly high clip. So then you're left with who's going to win the second round, right? Now, it might be the case where someone starts good in the second round, then fades. Like, it's really hard to tell. But I do think Pedro's going to be coming on in that third round if he makes it there. I do think Aldo's going to be slowing down. And then, you know, I probably think that he's going to get hit hard. Pedro's going to get hit hard in the first round. So for that reason, it's a very, very hard fight for me to call. I could be swayed either way. You know what I mean? If someone sat down and was like, okay, Jose Aldo's going to win, this is the reason, I'd probably believe them, you know, if they made a good case. And then if someone sat me down and was like, yo, Pedro's going to win, and this is the reason, I'd probably believe them, right, if they made a good case. So I'm kind of torn, and the bookies are torn as well. So me and the bookies agree on this one. Maybe I'd probably make it a minus 110 pick 'em. I just think that, look, if Pedro is able to get them leg kicks going early, then he might be able to start to gas Aldo out earlier than usual, right? Like earlier than the late second round. It might even come early second round. So I'm probably going to lean Pedro, but as I say, minus 110 would potentially be where I lined it. But for the sake of a prediction, for the sake of the podcast, I will lean with Pedro getting the decision win here.
And interesting, like Guru said in a previous fight, fight to be won by split or majority decision, just overall not picking a side, is plus 330 in this fight. And given how close and how sketchy it could get, given where Aldo Gas is out, because that is what I'm banking on. I'm not saying that Pedro comes out and definitively wins round one. So that is a really good idea if you think that, you know, you might want to play a smaller prop with a bigger plus price tag.
Sounds like an amazing live betting opportunity. But without further ado, we should really get to this banger of a main event here. The title fight between Derek Lewis and Ciryl Gane for the vacant heavyweight championship.
Well, the interim.
Interim. Why did I say vacant? What the poor Francis Ngannou. I'm disrespecting him more than Dana White.
And that's pretty hard to do, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, listen, this fight, we could spend an hour breaking it down, talking about the tendencies. And, I mean, it's so easy to me. Ciryl Gane is truly elite. The movement, the footwork. Have we seen him under duress, under serious pressure, under do I give up or do I keep going? No. But have we seen him be able to stay out of those situations against every heavyweight so far? Yes. So what tells me, I mean, listen, I really think that Gane is able, you know, I've been the biggest Gane hater ever since I've been trying to fade him.
We've both been trying to fade him.
But isn't that what you do with hot prospects in the UFC? Like, you try to fade them, you try to find the best value to avoid playing the big favorites. And like, I finally have reached the point where like, this is where I would normally be trying to fade Gane once again. And instead I'm doing a super greasy parlay with Rafael Fiziev, because that just feels like the two guys to me that really should win their fights. And a couple sketchy things might happen on the scorecards for Fiziev against Green. And, you know, there might be a sketchy overhand right or uppercut or a sweep from bottom, and all of a sudden some ground and pound from Lewis. Like, there's a couple ways that Lewis can win, but they're all coming by knockout. So like, if you really feel crazy about it, go and hedge off, do whatever. But like, I can't live my life like that. I think I'm done trying to fade Ciryl Gane. And here we go. Just play away for me. It's Ciryl Gane.
This isn't the spot to fade him. You know, I tried fading him with Jarzynho Rozenstrike. Stupidly, didn't work. Tried to fade him with Alexander Volkov. Really, really missed that hand speed. That hand speed is absolutely elite. Was a real miss on the tape for me in terms of that. What I see here, I've done a little bit of Vegas math, as you guys have seen lately. I'm going to do some Vegas math. Lewis was plus 350 to Curtis Blaydes in that fight. And obviously, since Blaydes won, it's fairly obvious to say that there was some extreme value on Blaydes. Now he's plus 240 to Gane? Why? But I mean, I think it's an overcorrection. I think the line should be flipped. He should have been 240 versus Blaydes, and he should be 350 versus Gane. Gane versus Blaydes, Gane is a better fighter than Blaydes. I think that's, I mean, other than maybe the, right, maybe we haven't seen the takedown defense of Gane really super tested, but we saw Blaydes try to take down Derek Lewis, and that didn't work either. So I feel fairly confident with what I'm saying. The Vegas line here, it's a little bit of an overcorrection because of the last Derek Lewis knockout. I don't think that same value is here. In fact, we know it's not because the line is so different. What we also have seen from Gane, like we say, we bank on the tape. Gane shows patience beyond his fights. You know, he's only 9-0, but he shows an extreme level of patience. So especially versus somebody like Derek Lewis, you're going to need that patience. He's not going to do something like Blaydes and rush in and try to get taken down. So I like Gane here. I think the play, similar to the one I had before, is one of those round groupings that FanDuel offers. Ciryl Gane, round 4-5 or decision, plus 100. What do we think? Lucrative, seal the show for us, baby.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely on Gane. You guys said you've been trying to fade him. I've been betting on him since he came into the UFC because I just saw, even though he only had 3 fights when he first came in the UFC, man, if you watch some of his tape, you know, even the way he moves, like the way he strikes, I know he hadn't had a lot of experience in MMA at that point, but you could just kind of tell like that this guy was an elite striker, right? I bet on him in his first four fights in the UFC. Now, he was a big favorite in all of them fights, but I found ways to play them. So the first two fights, I played him inside the distance. I got plus money on that. He kind of pulled out a submission with 4 seconds to go against Dontell Mays that cashed me that ticket there inside the distance. Always nice to hit. I was throwing up my ticket, and then he goes for a heel hook. So, I mean, that just shows you, you know, the level he's at. He's going for heel hooks, which obviously it's not always great to go for heel hooks, but there was 4 seconds left in the fight. And the guy is a kickboxer. He's 4-0. He's in the UFC, and he's tapping someone with a heel hook. So that just shows, you know, the level he's at. Then he fought Tanner Boza. I played him via decision there. It was like plus 300. And obviously that went to decision. And then he fought Junior Dos Santos. I played him, I believe I might have put him in a parlay at like minus 300, but I definitely played him in round two. And he obviously got the round two stoppage there. So I've been betting on this guy as soon as he come in. You know? I didn't bet on him against Jairzinho or Volkov. I should have bet him against Volkov. I'm kicking myself there. Jairzinho was a massive favorite. I wasn't finding too much value on it. I was thinking maybe playing by decision, but we just saw Jairzinho get absolutely starched by Ngannou. I didn't really know like the chin of Jairzinho. I still don't really know if he's got a great chin. But anyway, I get to this fight now. Derek Lewis versus Ciryl Gane. I mean, this is so easy to break down, right? Derek Lewis is reliant on the bomb. It is what it is. You know, there's not much to talk about. Ciryl Gane's going to be picking him apart until he dies or until he wins. I mean, it really stops there. I think Gane should be at least 80% in this spot, so that's minus 400. I don't think you can give Lewis much more than 20% of landing a bomb. I think him, Lewis via decision, I might even cap that 1%. I seriously wouldn't give it even more than 1%. He's not going to win a decision here. I don't think it's going to go too long. I don't think it's going to get into the fifth round. You know, you said 4-5 decision. Look, it could do because Gane, you know, he is kind of more of a decision fighter if you're talking about heavyweights. But when you're talking about Derek Lewis, when has the guy ever been to a 5-round decision? Never. When has he been to a fifth round? Never. Has he been melted before? Multiple times. You know, Mark Hunt knocked him out in the fourth round after pressuring him. Junior Dos Santos knocked him out in the second round. I think he's never been to fifth round in his career. He's only been a fourth round once, and obviously got stopped in that fight. He was just completely tired. And then he's been finished in all of his losses in the UFC. The only loss he hasn't been finished, I believe, was against Sean Jordan in like his second or third fight or something. So I think Ciryl Gane's probably going to be able to get a finish at some point here. But of course, Derek Lewis is always live for that bomb. We haven't seen Ciryl Gane's chin tested too much because he's just so good. You know, Volkov, who's a great striker, couldn't really land clean on him, you know, whereas Gane landed clean on Volkov multiple times. We have seen him hit once cleanly against Junior Dos Santos, and he took that fine. Obviously, it's different getting hit by Junior and then Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis hits as hard as anyone in the division, maybe even Ngannou. You know, them guys are on a tier of their own than is everybody else when you're talking about power in the heavyweight division. So I think Ciryl Gane's going to get a finish in this fight. I think he's probably going to be able to, like, hurt him to the body. We know Derek Lewis is weak to the body. To the head, not really. You know, he takes a lot of punishment, but to the body, he is weak. He's shown that on multiple occasions now. Travis Brown, Junior Dos Santos, you know, he's been hurt to the body quite a few times. So, yeah, I think that Ciryl Gane's going to get a stoppage in maybe the second or third round here. So, Ciryl Gane, body kick TKO, round three.
Wow, that's so funny because the way that you capped that with the specific prediction, how... with the kick to the body, I was thinking the body shot is how it's going to happen. And then the other thing that sticks out to me is Curtis Blaydes is hurting Derek Lewis in the stand-up in round one. And then this guy shoots from like 5 feet away and gets countered with the uppercut. Like, you're winning in the stand-up with your jab. What? And then he gets the unfortunate eye poke as he takes the back and then reaches around and scrapes Lewis in the eye. And like, that took away a ton of momentum at the end of round one. Like, listen, we could have been talking about Blaydes walking away with that victory if you know, he doesn't poke Lewis in the eye and lose that momentum. And then round two comes around. He's not as sure and confident. And all of a sudden, he's shooting again. So Lewis, yeah, he had the perfect game plan for that one. Ciryl Gane's not going to be shooting desperation shots from 10 feet away. He does them so opportunistically. And you really see that it's done when, you know, when he gets touched, and it's not often. But I do trust that he manages the distance, manages the range. And yeah, it feels right. And you know what? I really do think the knockout is the best way to do it, but it's priced appropriately. Last I saw, plus 135. So I'm not rushing to play just a straight up
plus
knockout.
Plus 165 on FanDuel.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because that means since I looked last, money came in, because yeah, I mean, it was it's DraftKings is plus 130 and you're saying FanDuel is plus 160.
That's what I said, plus 165 on FanDuel.
All right, yeah. But, so, I mean, listen, if that's because that's what I think, and honestly, that's a lot more value.
Or you find, or maybe you find, like what Lucrative was saying, maybe you like that round grouping better. I had suggested originally the round grouping of 4-5 decision at plus 100. Sounds like one of those things that I get wrong. It sounds like Gon could really, you're right, hurt a gassed Lewis to the body and finish him maybe in round 2 or 3 or something like that.
Go on.
All I wanted to quickly say, no, and then please go, was just that prop was plus 180 for round 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
But please, Lucrative, tell me what you think.
I was just going to say, you know, in terms of the KO prop, Ciryl Gane has 3 finishes in the UFC. 2 are submission, 1 is a KO. Mm. So, you know, it might be worth just taking it inside the distance, but at the end of the day, it really is how you cap it. For me, if I'm taking a fight to finish, I usually like to I like to be safe and just play it inside the distance, unless the lines are completely disparaged. Like we spoke about Anderson Dos Santos earlier, right? He's like plus 800 via submission. Inside the distance going to be like plus 250 or something. So when the line's that different, I probably will opt for one or the other. But because you're getting plus 105, plus 110, as opposed to plus 130, plus 160, me personally, I would go for the inside the distance. But I am predicting the KO, so I mean, you know, it really depends. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
That makes a lot of sense.
What is that inside the distance prop? It's probably
plus 105, plus 110, I think.
Really?
Around there.
Plus 105. I might just take that with you.
And it's a minus 110 on DraftKings, so the value there is on FanDuel.
And I bet you Saturday on fight day, even though FanDuel has a plus 105 right now, it won't be plus 105 fight day. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
Get your chronic combat nice and early. And I guess that really wraps it up there, right? It sounds like we had a lot of consensus picks.
Yeah.
It was great. Great to get together and do this, Lucrative. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for your time, pleasure, man. Seriously.
Had a great
time. 2 hours of breaking this stuff down.
I had a great time.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is what I love to do, man. Speak fights, you know, it's my favorite thing in the world. So definitely, I've enjoyed it and we'll definitely do it again sometime.
Anytime you want, anytime you maybe need a guest somewhere or something, happy to do something with you.
Yeah, bro.
Guys, check out his backs. What's your .com?
Lucrative. If we wanted MMA, to buy some picks. Yeah, lucrativemmabetting.com. Anyone can follow me on Twitter. You know, I'm easy to find, man. YouTube channel as well, podcast, all of that. I've been slacking on the podcast because my main priority is getting the bets out, but I am going to be coming back with a podcast next week. So, or maybe this week. We'll see if I got some time. I don't know.
All right.
We love it. Well, you gave us your extra time this week, so we really, really appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, boys. Bye.